Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome, welcome. I am back. Thank you for your patience in dealing with my absence last night. I apologize for it, but no, I don't. The purpose of being gone, of course, being to go and watch the boy play football. It was a tough night in Mount Hope. We went down to defeat again. We are 0-3. But you know what? Losses are teachable moments, perhaps more so than wins are. Wow, listen to that ex post facto rationalization. But it's true. Yeah, it is true. I say that because, among other things, it's provided an opportunity to watch some game film. And I got to tell you, they moved Bird from linebacker down to the defensive line. And he was in the backfield all night long. I'm sorry, I'm a proud papa. What are you going to do? The lovely and talented Doodle was over on the sidelines cheering her little heart out. Beautiful, exuberant, all those cheerleadery things. That just makes a daddy proud. Anybody who's a parent knows what I'm talking about. But that's where I was last night. But I'm here tonight. And there are some clouds sort of rolling in. It's a little bit gray here in what's left of wild, wonderful, West by God, almost level Virginia. And I think we'll be clearing out the stack tonight, among other things. Because there's a bunch of stuff that hasn't been touched on. Starting off, some catch-up work. You know, we talked, I guess it was Wednesday night, was it not? Or perhaps it was Tuesday. These things do tend to run together just a bit for me. We talked about the fact that the woman who played Norma, who was the basis for the character Norma Rae, had passed away. She passed away of brain cancer. We talked about the fact that she found herself, as does most anyone who involves themselves in the attempt to make human life better in this nation and on this planet, she found herself expanding from something from labor rights into all the rest of the human rights, because all of these things are merely subsets of human rights. Well, there's a little bit of a follow-up. I don't know if you listen to other liberal or progressive programs. You may have already heard this. I don't know. But Crystal Lee Sutton died when she did, at least in part, because for a period of time, her health insurance would not cover the medications she needed to treat her disease. I read that and my eyes just sort of ached. It was described she said, Crystal Lee Sutton. How in the world can it take so long to find out whether they would cover the medicine or not when it could be a matter of life or death? It is almost like, in a way, committing murder. But, of course, we know that that is exactly what the for-profit, the profit-driven, the avarice. Maybe I'm getting it wrong by calling it for-profit. Maybe that's the wrong word. Maybe avarice is the word we need to be playing with here. You know, language matters, and we talk a lot about what language we want to use on this program. Maybe it's the for-avarice misery industry. Because they do this all the time. All the damn time. It's shocking. It's astonishing. It ought to be illegal. And it is certainly, in my estimation, it is sufficient to bring about what I would call a corporate death penalty. How many decades have the four avaricious healthcare providers had to get it right? To not be avaricious, to not drive people to death and despair. And yet they have continued to do so unabated with real aplomb. I'm at the point where I say that a moral public, a moral citizenry, citizen sovereigns who understand conscience and morality should look at their elected representatives and say, no more. No more. Eliminate the healthcare companies and take it over and let the people do the people's work. There's a new study out by Harvard Medical School. By their calculation, our earlier article that suggested 20-some thousand individuals die every year because of want of health insurance was pathetically low. According to the new study from Harvard Medical School, it's 45,000 Americans a year die because they lack health insurance. For those of you into the math, that's roughly one American citizen every 12 minutes. From the start of this show to now, we are 5 minutes away from another American dead for want of health insurance. Which really means for want of meaningful access to quality health care. You know, no ticky, no shirty. By the time we reach the end of the first half hour of this program, two American citizens will have died somewhere in this country for want of access to meaningful quality health care. By the end of the first hour, five American citizens will be dead for want of access to quality, meaningful health care. By the end of the program this evening, 15 people will be dead for want of access to quality, meaningful health care. Not dead from disease, dead from the ability to have disease treated. Just as the insurance companies signed the death warrant of Crystal Lee Sutton by taking 2 months to approve medication to treat her illness. And the question arises, of course, is that okay? I believe it is Macbeth toward the end of things in that play by Shakespeare who, when informed of the death of Lady Macbeth, says, and I'm paraphrasing, well, she would have died sooner or later anyway. That is the... And remember, Macbeth is not one of Shakespeare's more lovable characters. And that is the attitude, and that is the business model promulgated in MBA programs all over the country. That is the business model of the healthcare industry. Well, they're going to die of something. Might as well be lack of healthcare. this is going to be an interesting 3 hours, because in this 3 hours, I'm going to have those 15 people, whomever they may be, on my mind. As you will yours. Not dead from disease, but dead from the inability to treat illness. And just in case you were wondering, have you heard this? Let's say you are a woman in a troubling relationship. Oh, BS, Bob, quit playing with the fancy words. Let's say you're a woman in a marriage or a relationship in which you routinely have the snot beaten out of you by some by the guy with whom you are either married or cohabited. Guess what? The for-avarice healthcare industry says that's a pre-existing condition. In D.C. and 8 states, the usual suspects, Idaho, Mississippi, North Carolina, North Dakota, Oklahoma, South Carolina, South Dakota, and Wyoming, insurance companies are permitted to claim the injuries sustained as a result of that ubiquitous phrase, domestic violence, you know, when the old man just, you know, hit me again, I can put a little stank on it. When the old man decides to wallop her and she goes to the hospital, I'm sorry, ma'am, your insurance won't cover. They say it's a pre-existing condition. Isn't that the moral equivalent of telling a rape victim that she had it coming to her because of how she was dressed? Lady, you were born female, your boyfriend knocked the piss out of you, and we ain't gonna cover it. Holy mackerel. What sort of a nation that calls itself a Christian nation, a nation founded on the Bible, would even begin to tolerate something like that? But wait a minute. But of course, those self-same people who say, this here is a Christian nation founded on Judeo-Christian principles. That same crowd is also ankle deep in their love of fetuses, right? Yeah. But of course, that fetus love only goes so far. Because the other thing, in addition to not covering you when the boyfriend beats you up real good, Anthem Blue Cross, for instance. Anthem Blue Cross, they've been more than actively engaged in fighting the attempt to bring, you know, to stop those 45,000 deaths a year that come about as a result of need of adequate health care. Anthem Blue Cross says that pregnancy is optional. And therefore, not a requirement of insurance. Anthem Blue Cross spokesman said, the point of insurance is to insure against catastrophic care costs. That's what you're trying to aggregate and pool for such things as heart attacks and cancer. Having a child is a matter of choice. Dealing with an adult-onset illness such as diabetes, heart disease, breast, or prostate cancer is not a matter of choice. Really? The right wing doesn't want us to have access to a public option or any, or God knows, simply Medicare for all. And for the right wing, pregnancy is not a choice. It's a woman's sacred duty imposed upon her by God. And as such, well, just tell you what it was. Woman in Colorado, according to a New York Times story. She had golden rule insurance. Oh, that just doesn't sound good. The New York Times story reports... She was turned down, you know, as in not covered by her insurance. She was turned down because she had given birth by cesarean section. Having the operation once increases the odds that it will be performed again, and if she became pregnant and needed another cesarean, Golden Rule did not want to pay for it. The company explained in a letter that if she'd been sterilized after the cesarean, or if she was over 40 and had given birth two or more years before applying, well, she might have qualified. Might? Under what circumstances? Some bean counter takes a pair of dice and, you know, if I roll boxcars, you get the coverage. If anything else, it's all snake eyes, sweetheart. Yeah. Cesarean sections. Pre-existing condition. But there is, there's a little good news. There is a practice in the for avarice, agony, misery, illness, and death industry called rescission. Jesus, that sounds medical all by itself, doesn't it? Rescission is that process in which an insurance company looks at you and says, "Yeah, wait a minute, whoa. You're sick now? We got to go look at the contract. We got to call the boys over in legal. Hey, do we got to cover this?" And in this particular instance of good news, we're talking about a company called Assurant, A-S-S-U-R-A-N-T, Assurant. They used to be called Fortis. They've been ordered by, of all states, South Carolina. You know it's got to be bad if the South Carolina insurance commissioner gets off his or her well-paid behind and says, "Wait a minute." Assurant has been ordered by the South government of the state, people of the state of South Carolina, namely its Supreme Court. Assurant has been ordered to pay $10 million because they wrongly revoked the insurance policy of a 17-year-old college student when he tested positive for the human immunodeficiency virus, HIV. They did this in 2002, and the Supreme Court of South Carolina said what Assurant did was reprehensible. It's the highest amount any insurance company has ever been ordered to pay in a rescission case. Justice Gene Hofer, if B-O-E-H-N-E-R is boner, this must be Hofer. You know, please. Can more Smiths and Joneses just try to get into the news just to make my life a little bit simpler? Justice Gene Hofer wrote, "We find ample support in the record that Fortis's conduct was reprehensible. Fortis demonstrated an indifference to Mitchell's life and a reckless disregard to his health and safety." I guess that would constitute an activist court now, wouldn't it? Sure. So maybe our new word is the for avarice agony, illness, misery, and death industry. What do you think? Because it really is. It goes beyond greed, and it is certainly miles past profit. When you are doing the equivalent of marching someone up the pyramid steps, laying them barebacked over a stone and cutting out their bleeding, beating heart while they are still alive and showing it to the howling corporate crowd. It's human sacrifice, isn't it? 45,000 Americans are subjected to corporate, avarice-driven human sacrifice every year. And the question is, are we willing to tolerate it? Are you willing, are we as a people willing to participate in what is nothing short of human sacrifice? And if you are willing to participate in it, then I don't know, I don't want to know you. I don't want to know who you are, where you are. No, really, I do, because if I ever get within 500 miles of you, I want to make sure I make it 501. If I see you coming down my side of the street, I want to cross the street. If I see you breathing the same air as me, I want to go get different air. Because I don't go in for human sacrifice, whether it is the post-term retroactive abortion of brown people in far-flung foreign lands, or whether it is the retroactive postpartum abortion of the American men and women in those dumbass wars, or whether it is a woman who finds the lump, or the man who coughs up that first little dot of blood, only to know that it is as sure a death sentence as a writ handed down by an axe-dragging executioner. I don't want nothing to do with it. No part of it. And any politician that does is getting, as far as I'm concerned, damned close to forswearing his or her humanity. Charles Grassley, Max Baucus, the Gang of Six. They are abdicating their very most essential humanity by siding with the four avarice, agony, misery, illness, and death industry. Do you think different? It's Friday on the front porch. Come on up, grab a long neck out of the zinc tub. It's ice cold. Get yourself a sweet iced tea, whatever you want. And we'll talk about it. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
Hey, Cassie.
How are you?
I'm doing good.
Well, other than the stuff you just talked about. So if what you talked about was human sacrifice, then the insurance company is practicing female sacrifice right now.
Yeah.
Because the two stories that you talked about, the one that was about denying health care to women who are pregnant, or women, like, here's what I don't get. They don't cover birth control.
Right.
They don't cover abortion. But pregnancy is the woman's choice, even if her husband beat her up and raped her.
Yes.
And so they're not going to cover that either.
Right. You got it. I mean, it probably makes your head feel like it's just going to pop like an overripe melon, Cassie, but yeah, you've got it.
Okay, what if it's child abuse? People who abuse children do it more than once.
That I don't know. This
who has private insurance goes to the hospital for child abuse. Are they going to deny that too?
Well, but see, wait a minute. Because I can't speak for the for avarice, agony, illness, misery, and death industry. But you know, thankfully, in this country, we have something called CHIPS, and that is a public option children's health care program. And no, they don't say no when the child's been beaten.
Right, but you have to have a certain level of income. If you have private insurance, then you don't have CHIPS.
Maybe not. I mean, it depends. It's based on a percentage of the poverty level. Oh, Cassie, we have to have a better charge on our cell phone when next we call. But we will continue with Cassie as soon as she dials back in, which she may be doing even now. Let's see if this is her. Maybe it will be. Hey, welcome to the program.
Are you going to make me do every topic in a new phone call?
you're female. I'm not arguing, okay? I mean, you know, I'm going along however you want to do this. If you want to hang up after every topic, that's okay. We'll just call right back.
Okay. The other topic that I wanted to ask you about was... you heard about this thing in Oklahoma where 75% of kids in high school don't know who the first president was?
Dear God.
Did you hear that?
No.
On your front page, Bob.
I don't always go to the front page.
75%. It's on the front page. On the horn.
I know. I don't always go there.
Radio Network.
I know. I don't run the front page.
Well, okay. 75% of the high school students in Oklahoma can't name the first president of the U.S. And here's what I think is going on.
Do they know whether or not, putting this sort of tongue and groove with the study we talked about Wednesday, or the poll we talked about Wednesday, are they certain whether or not Barack Obama is the Antichrist?
I don't know. That's the New Jersey people.
Right. And I'm figuring if that's New Jersey, you know, what's the number in Oklahoma? I mean, this is the state that that Bart Kopp, bless his heart, refers to as K-drag. You know, knuckle drag.
Well, I thought Texas was bad, but...
Oh, no, Oklahoma exists. Oklahoma exists so people in Texas have someone to look down at.
Yep.
Just like Mississippi for Alabama.
Anyway, I think that they don't want kids to know what the country is really about and what democracy is really about and what freedom is really about. And so they have made it dumbed down so much that kids feel completely stupid about social studies, and then they don't ask any questions about our country.
Okay, and now you mentioned Texas, so don't anybody hang this one out on me, okay? This is Cassie's doing. Remember, Cassie, in conjunction with the fact that 75% of Oklahoma high school students can't name the first president of the United States, the new Texas book history standards curriculum... they want to de-emphasize information like George Washington was the first president and replace it with how conservatives have made America better.
I know. I think that they started to use those textbooks in Oklahoma.
Right across the Red River, it may be Guinea Pig City. You know, do you understand now that when we have our little conversations about where Cassie's going to college, I say anywhere but Texas?
I thought it was anywhere but Texas and anywhere but Oklahoma.
Well, Well, if I say anywhere but Texas, that sort of lets Oklahoma out a priori, okay?
And Mississippi?
Yeah, we ain't going Mississippi.
Okay.
Shall we continue? Nothing in Alabama either. There's a nice college in Tennessee.
Dartmouth called.
Dartmouth called. Now, you have to be careful with a place like Dartmouth, Cassie, because that's the place that gave rise to that hateful she thing, Ann Coulter.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. So, I mean, just saying. You know, I mean, granted, George Bush went to Harvard and Yale. I mean, it's not an automatic...
Ivy League, so you don't get to go both ways here. You want me to go to the Ivy League?
Yeah, I want you in the Ivy League.
So I'm telling you that Dartmouth called.
That's awesome. And, of course, you've already enjoyed a cup of coffee at Cornell. Now, I think things are shaping up nicely, but I did say there is a lovely little college in Tennessee. Alabama's out, Mississippi's out, Kentucky is not entirely out, most of Florida is out. So South Carolina, North Carolina, maybe sort of, but no. Let's see who else. Anything? Sorry, Ange, but Arkansas is out too.
Harvard's too big, and Boston's too big.
No, it's not.
Boston's too big.
Boston is not too big. You'll have friends in Boston.
I'll have friends in Boston.
You have friends in Boston.
I do?
In or near.
Okay.
You have horn friends in Boston. Are you in the chat room?
Yes.
You see Lottie?
Yes.
That's your friend in Boston.
Oh.
You ever heard Patrick call in?
Yes.
He's in Massachusetts. Even as we speak, Scott and Linda are cooking dinner again, and I'm going to do everything in my power not to ruin it. And they're not too far.
Well, I'm going to ruin it with the next story.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Don't listen if you're cooking dinner. The next story is...
Yeah, this is her fault. Go ahead.
Rush Limbaugh...
Yes?
...wants to go back to having segregated buses.
Yeah, I kind of caught that. There was a fight on a school bus. You know, there's only one fight on a school bus in the entire country every day, and it always involves a couple of black kids attacking a white kid. Never mind the fact that there's no proof that this was racially motivated. You know, they weren't saying, you know, go and get you, Whitey. You know, no.
The family that I'm in right now, family I'm in right now, my sisters and I are all different colors.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
I think we need to segregate the bathroom. We definitely, need to segregate the bathroom so that each person can comb their hair without getting hair all over other people. And then I think... that we need to segregate the kitchen table and put up dividers or
and you know what you should probably
after other people.
You should probably install a water fountain just so that you can segregate it.
Don't we need two water fountains?
Yes.
One that has cold water and one that has warm water.
No. They can both have cold water, but the whites and everybody else.
Okay. We'll set it up tomorrow. This is the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
Well, it came out of Rush Limbaugh's mouth now, didn't it?
Yes. Definition stupid.
There you go. Just telling Lottie that I'm a son of the capstone at Tuscaloosa. He says University of Alabama is a great school. A buddy of mine went there. I bet I'm the buddy. Okay. Yeah, no. Rush Limbaugh's an idiot.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate to steal Al Franken's title. Well, Al Franken's book actually was Rush Limbaugh is a Big Fat Idiot, which is true too.
Mm-hmm.
But. Yeah, this is astonishing stuff. Because it's 2009, every now and then you see one of these and you look up and you go, no. See, no, just no. I mean, you know, I got the precursor audio here. You might enjoy it.
Greetings, my friends. Well, it's Obama's America, is it not? Obama's America. White kids getting beat up on school buses now. I mean, you put your kids on a school bus, you expect safety. But in Obama's America, the white kids now get beat up with the black kids cheering, yeah, right on, right on, right on, right on. And, of course, everybody said, oh, the white kid deserved it. He was born a racist. He's white. Newsweek magazine told us this. We know that white students are destroying civility on buses, white students destroying civility in classrooms all over America, white congressmen destroying civility in the House of Representatives.
Now wait, let's have a little moment here, Cassie. You heard that, right?
Yes.
Are you familiar with you're in debate, right?
Yes.
Are you familiar with the concept of the straw man?
Yes.
Can we
not from debate?
Oh, okay.
From Rachel Maddow.
Oh, okay, okay. Let's see. Newsweek magazine told us this. Straw man. We know that white students are destroying civility on buses. Straw man. White students destroying civility in classrooms all over America. Straw man. White congressmen destroying civility in the House of Representatives. Straw man. Because no one has asserted those tenets. It's like that stupid email I got a couple of days ago saying, the ACLU is going to eliminate crosses in our military cemeteries. There's not a shred of evidence to suggest it.
But the other thing is, even if Rush is telling the truth, even if, like, I don't read Newsweek, but even if white students are disrupting classrooms, well, so are black students and so are Hispanic students and so are Asian students. Like, everybody disrupts class.
You know, I'm guessing you've probably seen this sort of thing, Cassie, but I went down to pick up Ferg and Doodle to take him to the football game yesterday afternoon, okay? So it's bus time. And there is this teacher whose name I won't use. And they call him by his last name and talk back to him as though, and this guy has been dedicated. I mean, and he's been teaching since God was a baby. And I just looked at him after one of these kids mouthed off at him, and I said, are they all like this, mister? You know, here I am, a full-grown adult, and I call him mister.
Mm-hmm.
They're calling him by his last name.
Because he's not white.
No, he's quite white. That's the whole point. Nobody has a monopoly on respect or the lack thereof. You know, this is a middle school. They're all heathens because they're middle schoolers.
Yeah.
You know, I suggest just, I don't know what the answer is, but, you know, grades 5 through 8 just, you know, put them in some sort of stasis and wake them up for 9th grade or something. You know, play tapes in there. I will be respectful. I will not be a little heathen. I was, frankly, I deal with this. I was shocked. You know, this has nothing to do with race. These were little, you know, we got two black kids in this school. And this was, and he just looked at me and says, I gave up a long time ago. There's no parenting going on in the homes. Wow, you know, just wow. So, I mean, I wasn't trying to just run over your phone call, but.
No, that's okay. Did it ever bother you that I've called you Bob? Since I first met you?
No, because generally, I follow a protocol that says you call somebody Mr. or Ms. or Miss, whatever the case may be, until they say, call me otherwise. And I never suggested that you call me anything but Bob. I get Mr. Kincaid letters, and I immediately, please call me Bob, because this is a very familiar, this is a very informal situation. But, you know, I still call people Mr. and Mrs. That I don't know. Yeah, it's a matter of raising, I reckon. Maybe I'm just anachronistic, but I got a feeling there are a few other people out there a little younger than me and considerably older that would say, yeah, that's how it works.
I guess it depends on how you meet them.
Well, yeah, precisely. That's what I just said. You know, I'm Bob.
No, but I mean, like, if you meet somebody at the pool, you're not going to call them Mr. or Mrs.
My kids
but
do.
If you meet... Oh.
My kids have been taught that they are Mr., or if they are older than you, they are Mr., Mrs., Miss, or Ms., until such time as they tell you to call them otherwise. I mean, maybe we're just harsh, but I mean that's the way I was raised, and because you know,
I use ma'am and sir a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Even with people that I call by their first name, but I don't know. I wasn't raised to call people Mr. or Mrs. unless they were introduced that way.
Well, you know, when you go off to college and you have, Dr. Thumbfingers for physics.
Oh.
You're going to call him Phil?
No.
That person has worked rather hard to get that post hole digger put behind his or her name.
But, I mean, I've never called a teacher by their first name.
And why?
Because they introduce themselves by Mrs. or Mr.
Mm-hmm.
When they put their name on the board. Actually, my advisory teacher,
mm-hmm.
on the first day of class, had us go through our schedules. And in front of each teacher's name, because it would just say room 135 so-and-so, room 135 so-and-so, had us go through each one. And put Mr. or Miss in front of them. So we would know how to address them when we got to the class. That's one of the things that they had us do when we were doing our schedules the first day.
And if you think about it, well, I mean, think about the times that Ferg has been in here laughing so hard. Whenever I do a story on the former vice president, Richard
right.
B. Cheney. And remember, we're talking about a middle schooler here.
Yeah.
To whom everything is dirty. You know, because that's the way middle schoolers are. Wow, was that biased or what? And then Dick Cheney said, and Ferg will go, you know, there's... Or I'll be babbling wrong, and I'll say, well, listen, Dick. And he's gone again. And it's not necessarily some attempt to be surreptitiously vulgar or blue on my part. But, you know, dirty is in the ear of the beholder, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At some point, you just learn not to laugh quite so loud.
Yeah, and even
don't laugh.
And yeah, and even 46-year-olds sometimes go, you know, because the middle school sense of humor is never completely cured. Well, I'm not going to talk about it on the air, but I found a clip of Steve Martin doing it looks like the intro to 60 Minutes. I'm Mike Wallace. I'm Morley Safer, and then Steve Martin, and Ferg just came unglued, and just watching him laughing, I was had the tears rolling down my face too. Like I said, you never to one degree or another, no matter how serious you may get, somewhere along the way, that middle school sense of humor still exists. And by the way, the suggestions are rolling in. Our good friend Michael Kid A from the chat room. Says he recommends to you the University of Wisconsin Madison.
Okay, tell people
Marty on the other hand.
You're from 26 to 12, and now colleges are starting to call me, and I can't take more suggestions.
Well, that's okay. You've got two more. You've got the University of Wisconsin-Madison. You've got leave the University of California alone, and check out the University of Washington in Seattle.
Okay.
But that's just because everybody loves you.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they all want me to freeze to death.
Now stop it! You've been listening to me too much. there is, as was said to me by either Michael in Norway or Scott in Sweden, there is no such thing as being cold. There is only such thing as being inadequately dressed to deal with the conditions in which one lives.
Okay.
And I will have you know that at least until
on the gloves.
Right, and you know, I mean, for instance, I'll have you know that at least until we get finished screwing up the climate, the Gulf Stream runs right by Stavanger, Norway, and it's pleasant there almost year round. Hard to conceive, isn't it? Norway, pleasant. Now, see, I'm going to let no, but really.
I don't know anything about Norway.
Well, it's time you learned.
Okay.
Cassie,
you're
wonder.
You're going to be quizzing me on it during John's show.
No, no, I will not. I will not quiz you on Norway. I promise. I will give your email to Michael in Norway, and he can quiz you on Norway because he really knows Norway, being as how he is from there.
Okay.
All right, Cassie. Have a wonderful weekend. I hear you got a lot of work ahead of you, but.
Yeah, I'm around tonight though, and then I'm working over the weekend.
Okay. Well, we will talk soon then.
Okay.
All right.
Bye.
Bye now. Cassie's got a great sense of humor, and she's a real good sport. And it's such a joy to sort of share in this adventure with her. I don't know where she's going to go to college, but wherever she goes, she's going to leave a mark. That's one thing I do know pretty much for sure. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey. So Cassie should go to Swarthmore.
Swarthmore. Well, there's one that hasn't. I don't know. Maybe they've contacted her too.
Yeah. Well, it's a nice real liberal arts school, sort of like in the tradition of Reed College in Oregon.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's where I went. Reed College. But anyway, Swarthmore. You know, I mean, I think.
Oh, Reed is a great place. You know, Reed, Williams, Oberlin, Beloit.
Yeah, well. The only problem with Reed is that it's really too expensive. I mean, it was $10,000 a year when I went, which is a long time ago. Now it's like $30,000 a year.
Ouch.
It's obscene. It's obscene. It's sort of like, are you kidding me? They only had 1,200 on the campus, right? And I was the only nig-nog in the freshman class. You know how that was? They have a couple more black people out here these days, but not many more. But it's a great school.
No, oh, you know, it's kind of like that old joke about the horse that walks into a bar and says, "I'll have a martini," and the bartender says, you know, thinking, "Well, you know, it's a horse. Well, that'll be $10,000," and serves him the martini and says, "You know, we don't get a lot of horses around here." And the horse says, "At $10,000 a martini, I'm not surprised."
Oh God. Yeah, but Swarthmore, I don't know. I mean, she, you know. She might enjoy that experience, unless she's looking to the Ivy League. I heard you mention Cornell.
Yeah, well, she did a summer high school student study program at Cornell, and now she's getting letters from Dartmouth. But you know, there's great schools. There really are great schools all over. My focus, and it's admittedly biased, has been to try to get Cassie to go somewhere where she's not going to sit in freshman whatever 101 with 600 other students.
Well, yeah, that's why I was, you know, and I mean, Swarthmore is sort of, it's a bit esoteric because I think their curriculum is kind of the classics for the first 2 years or some madness, but it's really small and, you know, really sort of hands-on, you know, traditional liberal.
Yeah, and I'm living proof of how successful one can be with one of those degrees. I'm a firm believer in having that background.
Yeah, Yeah, no, I think, and you know, that school is has a decent enough reputation where she could bounce to the ginormous ones later. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
I kind of think, because she seems awfully sensitive. I don't, you know, and it seems like, you know what I mean? I know she hasn't come up easy. That's not what I mean. I just think that she has a lot to offer.
She's got a living brain and a breathing soul.
And needs to be nurtured. That's all. I was just thinking when she was talking about, yeah, sort of smallish liberal arts schools are quite good if you're a focus type like her. She seems to know herself pretty well.
Yeah, and you know, when you've got those smaller liberal arts colleges, with all due respect to Professor Sandra and her government class, you know, freshman algebra is often taught by a mathematics PhD.
Well, yeah. I mean, when I was at Reed, you know, the math class I took, you know, had, I think, 16 people in it. And, you know, we spent I don't know how many weeks on Fibonacci's numbers. You know, it's a bit, you know, it's kind of indulgent, but I don't know. I found it entertaining.
No, but I went to one of those small, itsy-bitsy, tiny liberal arts colleges myself for the first 2 years.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I'll never forget my New World prehistory class in which we all piled into a van and drove 100 miles and went to Cahokia Mounds in just across the river from St. Louis and had for a professor a guy who had dug there.
Oh.
And, you know, just having that wealth of information. Then on the way back, we stopped at a Mexican restaurant and swilled margaritas and went on home. You know, hoo-ah, liberal arts experience.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's all, I don't know, I'm sure some school like Columbia would be good. You know what I mean? I mean,
yeah, but I don't think Cassie would touch Columbia with a 20-foot battle lance because it's in New York.
Oh, okay. You said no Texas?
No Texas. No Texas.
They got some good some good professors at
Oh, they have. They have. They.
Austin.
Yeah, but that's the thing. She's grown up in Austin. Don't you know? If you, let's put it this way, I'm of the opinion that if you grow up in Cambridge, Massachusetts, you ought not go to Harvard.
Well, I don't even. I mean, you know. I mean, I guess obviously, if someone got into Harvard, it's kind of hard to say no. But there's so many all sorts of interesting schools in this country, at least for the time being.
Oh, I know. I remember being 17, 18 years old and trying to pick colleges, and I felt like a kid in a candy store.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, you know, if you have options, which she sounds like she does, and, you know, hopefully she has, some guidance on, you know, how to get the best deal for herself so she isn't paying. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's the main thing.
And that's the thing about these small liberal arts colleges.
Yeah.
They also frequently have monumental endowment funds if they haven't been completely tanked by the recent market madness.
Well, yeah, it's a bit sort of an unusual time right now. So I'm not too sure. All the endowments seem to be under attack, but a lot of those schools, especially for the high achieving types, there's loads of money to be had. You know.
Yeah, and you know, then all you got to do is keep it, and if you're willing to study, you can.
Yeah, but no, that's exciting. It's exciting listening to someone, you know, who you know, because she definitely, like you said, is going to leave a mark. That one, I've heard her on various shows for years now. You know.
Yeah, and it's been an experience for me and the rest of the Horn family, obviously for you, because it's been like. You know, it almost feels like it takes a village.
Yeah, no. It's like, you know, I you know, have high hopes for her, and you know, hopefully she can get somewhere that's...
But I tell you the truth, it wouldn't exactly bust my chops if she could have you for government one.
Well, who was slamming? Somebody was slamming the University of California system?
Yeah, that was your pal Marty.
Oh. Yeah, I don't, you know, I'm not too sure of the state of that. I know that Berkeley has some pretty good programs, but all those schools are ginormous, you know? I mean,
well, right, that's that whole thing about 600 people in biology one.
Yeah, and you know, you have to be, I don't recommend going to any sort of huge school like that. Wow.
And see, that was the nice thing for me, is that by the time I transferred away from the little liberal arts college, Sandra, I had gotten those intro classes pretty much out of the way. I was done with my first 2 years. And so the classes that I did take, at, you know, in West Virginia, WVU is not a small school. I mean, God, I think the student population is 30,000 now. It was 20,000. It was 20,000 when I was there.
That's big.
And but by the time I got there, I was taking junior level courses, and you know, the biggest class I had 30 people in it.
Right. Yeah. No. I mean, these schools out here, you're talking just hundreds of people for intro classes, you know, and it's really...
Oh, and it's the same thing if it's, with all due respect, and I can't say Michigan and Ohio State in the same breath, because the Sue and Guy James will kill me, but both, you know, all those Big Ten schools, you know, the biggest of the Big Ten schools is actually the University of Minnesota.
Well, what's the student body size there?
God, it's like 100,000 or something.
Is it? Oh, wow. Okay, it's one of them city-type schools.
It's amazing. I mean, maybe not 100,000, but you know, pretty darn close. And you know, really, what can you learn in a freshman survey class? That, I mean, if you've got a question and you raise it and you're sitting in the back of the room, the TA's got to have like binoculars to find you.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a difficult. God. Well.
Yeah, oh, and I'm told, yeah, Guy James would kill me twice.
He's an Ohio person.
Oh, right? Well, he and Sue are so Ohio State, yeah. You know, we had to put out a suicide watch last Saturday.
Oh, Lord. Oh, God. Oh, right. Is that,
that was Trestle, Trestle and Southern, and Pete Carroll and Southern Cal came to the Big Horseshoe, and it did not end well for the Scarlet and Silver faithful.
And I mean, I don't mean to add to their little problems, but when would they not be able to beat that USC team if it wasn't last weekend? I know. They had a freshman in the hole. You know, it was ready to fall. Oh well.
I know, but you know. the big fun's tomorrow.
When the
Volunteers travel down to Gainesville.
Oh snap! And then I guess that Kiffin is backtracking like there's no tomorrow, right? What an idiot! I was rolling when he first busted out. I was like, damn, this fool is brave.
But you know what? They UCLA came in last week, and
shut up. That was hilarious.
And you know, but you know, for the first couple of quarters, it looked like it was going to be a game. And yeah, then
he ran his mouth entirely too much. You understand? Not to back it up somewhat. No, that was not good.
I still think he will have a football team there, though.
Oh, at some point? Yeah, he's... No, this...
I mean, he's recruiting like crazy. He's getting good... He's just got bad quarterback right now. I mean,
yeah,
I
thought all his talking was quite amusing, but what do you think this fool is going to do down in Florida? That's going to be a beatdown.
Nah, I don't think it's going to be a beatdown.
You don't?
No, I don't.
Well, what do you...
Because I think... I actually think that some of that talk... You know, we're talking about the second coming of Christ, Tim Tebow here.
Well, so you think a little bit some Jedi mind tripping might be happening, huh?
I think he is so far, he may be so far deep inside Tim Tebow's skull that he knows what Tim Tebow's thinking before Tim does. the problem will be whether his daddy Monty can convey that to the defense too.
Well, you know what's funny though, because of course I would think it'd be great if Florida went down, because, you know, I'm so over it. The Meyer and that Tebow. I'm like, ugh, enough. But I don't know.
Well, yeah, you're right, because if I have to hear Brent Musburger one more time say, well, you know, I want to have Tim Tebow's babies.
Oh, no, that racist? I still have visions of him criticizing black folks in Mexico. No, I hate him. Sorry.
Well, I'm still waiting for the day when I get to watch a big game that he's not. My dad used to watch him and despised him too. And he said, "You know, boy, what I hate about him? He sings his play by play."
Ew. No, I just, you know, I just remember his, he was, you know, so over the top with the whole Olympics thing. And I remember, I mean, I don't, but I remember reading an op-ed he wrote about it. And it was just.
Well, no, last week, what was it, 2 weeks ago? It was 2 weeks ago when Virginia Tech played Alabama down in Atlanta. And they took Musburger out to the Speedway to go around the track a couple of times with some race car driver who's a Virginia Tech fan. And they're showing, you know, brave, bold Brent Musburger in the passenger seat. Who knew a NASCAR had a passenger seat, for God's sakes? But anyway, I'm sitting there watching him go around the track. And I'm going, Earnhardt.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? You did not say that.
I'm so evil.
You are so evil. No. Since you brought that up, I have to say, when that fool bit it, I was like, what's the big deal? You know, being ignorant about NASCAR, because I thought the world had stopped. I thought, what the hell?
It did around here. I kid you not, Sandra. It's one of those things that's been elevated to legend status. The woman who came knocking on the door the next day asking my wife to take her over to the Ben Franklin store across the river so that she could get some black crepe paper to drape her car in black button for Dale.
Mm. I was just like, you know, that was one of those demarcations for white America and the rest, because I didn't know what was happening. I was like, that's not my world. I don't know what that's about. But I kind of got curious and started looking into it a little bit, and no, I pulled right back.
Oh, and, you know, death threats against the guy he was in the wreck with, you know, holy cow.
Yeah, people took it. It's pretty emotional, huh?
Oh yeah, and you know our local Class A baseball team is the West Virginia Power. They used to be the Charleston Alley Cats, and then long ago they were the Charleston Charlies. But they play in the South Atlantic League, which is Class A ball. And it's fun ball. It's fun baseball to go to watch if you're a baseball fan. But they play in a league with the. It's some town in North Carolina, but they're the Intimidators.
Mm.
Because they were at one point owned by Dale, and he named them after his nickname.
And, but obviously his son is kind of a bit of a got problems, huh?
Well, yeah, but, you know, Dale Jr. is to Dale what Bo Cephas is to Hank Williams. You know, just a pale shadow of the daddy.
Yeah, speaking of daddy, did you catch Jordan's little speech? Jesus.
Oh, what?
Yeah, when he's saying, telling his own damn kids, I feel sorry for you because you got to walk in my shadow. I'm like, ooh, yikes. I just heard bits and pieces, but I thought, wow. Jordan, the basketball player, nice. Jordan, the man, really don't think I want to know.
Oh yeah, Jordan, the $200,000 Nassau on the 18 holes on a Sunday morning. Don't want to know that guy.
Oh my God! So yeah, it was just, you know, really over the top, his little induction speech. But I guess that's what we get for trying to idolize these fools.
Well, you know, and that's a question that popped into my head the other day, Sandra. I was thinking about that. Somebody was talking about how much one of these healthcare CEOs makes. You know, it's only $25-30 million a year. And you know, it's a sad commentary on the way my brain works within the cultural context of this country. I thought, Jesus, you know, when does this guy have a 2.0 ERA? Is he batting .398? Those are the people who get $25 million a year.
Oh God! You got that article. I'm not sure you knew that information, but I thought I'd send that to you about the latest numbers.
Yeah, that was the sick calculus we used at the beginning of the program.
Oh, okay. So
yeah, there are 15 dead Americans since the show started, Sandra.
Yeah, no, I just was, you know, sort of flabbergasted. Not that I was surprised, because I actually think it's a bit more. Because if you look at the calculus of how this system works, I think that there's loads more people who are at risk, you know, of death. And
well, and that's, you know, after I mentioned it, Sue dropped me a note, and she said, you know, just some context on that new study from Harvard. It comes from the American Journal of Public Health, and they get 2,203 papers submitted for publication last year. They published 429 of them. That's 19.5%. They're about as nonpartisan as any, as it is entirely peer reviewed, okay? You know, this is not, this isn't like a book by Ann Coulter.
Or Joe Blow blah. Yeah, I know what you're saying.
This is real live, honest to God, numbers that lots of smart people have looked at and critiqued before it ever went to print.
Yeah, which always means it's conservative, and I don't say that as a insult. I'm just saying.
No. I was going to say the same thing. It's the way it should probably be described, but won't in the for-profit media, is at least 45,000 people die per year.
Well, also, I just wanted to read you this one quote. This is like from Dennis Kucinich. She's saying that this legislation, the bill that Congress passes, will not have a public option, but with a private mandate requiring 30 million uninsured to buy private health insurance. If one doesn't already have it, if you are broke, you may get a subsidy. If you're not broke, you will get a fine if you do not purchase insurance. So, you know, that same thing that I've been going over every time I practically call, this mandate, that's going to provide more market share for the health insurers. I mean, I just can't get past it, Bob. It's really doing my head.
Well, I know. That's why I've sort of recast it this evening as the human sacrifice industry.
Your money or your life, I think, is what this diary is called. And
well, of course, Sandra, it also puts people into that same goofy-ass calculus of, well, let's see, which is worse, the fine for not having the health insurance I can't afford or the cost of the health insurance I can't afford? Whichever one's least, I'll take it.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, you know, we have such a problem here because, you know, I have to flash my little class. I am sort of stunned by the commentary. It's the, oh, no, I don't want to pay for these people who show up at the emergency room, and, ooh, the illegals are going to get health care, and, ooh, they're too fat. I mean, it's just the dynamic that we're dealing with in this country. No wonder we're not going to get any sort of resolution to this. There's a real problem here. People can't understand the social good. They can't see this as being a part of that.
Well,
and I'm not sure how we can get past it.
Sandra, have you seen this Tim Wise essay that's going around?
Tim or Kim?
Tim, T-I-M.
Tim, the ex-cracker who's now sort of reformed?
Yeah.
Yeah, that guy is great. Yeah, I haven't seen it.
Well, I got this email from Elaine, and she says, over the past year, I've tried to be fair. I admit to having some views that liberal friends have turned conservative. After the disgusting show of hate and disrespect this past week, both in the House chambers as well as right in front of our Capitol in Washington, D.C., which in no way added to the many issues our Congress and President have laying before them, I've come to what has been for others an obvious conclusion for a while now. I just wanted to give Republicans the benefit of the doubt. The Conservative Party wants to destroy this administration by any means possible. They have no intentions of agreeing to any bipartisan efforts on any issue. And she titled this email to me, "The Most Frightening Must-Read I've Ever Sent." And it's this Tim Wise article. And it's called, look it up, Ayn Rand and the Triumph of Conservative Cultism. It was published on September the 14th, Sandra. And he writes, at first it seemed little more than a bizarre rant, only slightly worse than those to which we've grown accustomed given the source. To wit, Rush Limbaugh, who on September 11th condemned President Obama for speaking that day about community service and encouraging young people to become involved in service projects as a way to help make America a better place. Far from seeing such a call to as a positive request to take personal responsibility for improving one's nation, to Limbaugh it was little more than the first step toward fascism, intended to conscript the young into a volunteer army, bent on helping to carry out the president's political agenda. Well, beyond that, he goes down and he begins to draw in, Sandra, he begins to draw in what we've referred to so many times on this program, the hatred that just bubbled and boiled up out of Ayn Rand. And he says, among the most interesting phenomena of the past year, and especially since the inauguration of Barack Obama, has been the explosion of interest in and sales of books by the late author Ayn Rand, most prominently her classic novels The Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged. Atlas Shrugged has had an all-time record year.
Are you kidding me?
No.
That book is, you know, for the uninitiated idiot, because it's so easy with the selfishness is good. Oh, my God.
And what he points out, it turns out the Ayn Rand Center for Individual Rights was among the sponsors of the 9/12 Tea Party march in Washington.
I mean, the simplicity of that business is so evil, because of course her philosophy is popular. All it does is deal with the self, you know, and that's on the rise. I'm not really surprised.
No, it's nuts, but it's just creepy beyond belief, because. He goes on and he says, Rand's disdain for the bulk of humanity was indeed so extreme that in the aforementioned Atlas Shrugged, whose main character and hero John Galt has been referenced on numerous Tea Party signs, she indulges in a pseudo-genocidal fantasy in which virtually everyone except Galt and his few perfect producers is vanquished. This happy occurrence results from a strike of the mind in which Galt and his superior colleagues of industry withdraw their talents from the nation and hole up in a mountain retreat rather than submit to things like government regulations. Those whom Galt condemns in the book, and thus whom Rand is herself condemning, are referred to as parasites who are unworthy of life. Indeed, Galt's contempt for the weak of the world prompts him and his colleagues to banish the word give from their small utopian gulch. Giving, after all, much like calls for community service, is for suckers. And, yeah, this is a brilliant piece of writing. Maybe I'll share the rest of it later in the program, but, it goes on to... It goes on to describe, he says, it is especially fascinating to see the so-called average everyday folks at the Tea Party rallies embracing Rand's thinking and literature. After all, Rand's view of the common man and woman, presumably the very Joe Sixpacks and hockey moms recently enthralled by her, was decidedly grotesque. So, for instance, in her original version of her work, We the Living, Rand had her chief protagonist proclaim, "What are your masses but mud to be ground underfoot, fuel to be burned for those who deserve it?"
And that Greenspan was in charge of the U.S. monetary system for how long?
And sucked on her toes for how long? I don't know.
That's what I'm saying. And even he was viewed with ridicule in the inner circle, right? They looked upon him as a bit of an idiot.
Yeah.
Too, which is funny in its own sense. But, yeah, no, that's just straight up evil. And these simple effers who are protesting, it boggles the mind.
Well, did you hear this most beautiful, most delicious little piece of irony coming out of Washington after the teabagging of Saturday?
No. What's that?
A congressman from Texas has written a letter to complain about the D.C. Metro service because the D.C. Metro, he claims, was insufficient to the needs of the people who were coming there to complain about government spending money on things like mass transit.
Well, they're lucky they didn't have a tragic accident. I wouldn't be caught dead on that system.
But just the very idea that somebody, we believe in limited government and we don't want to spend money on social programs.
Oh, no, I know. It's absurd. It's hard.
And he wrote in his complaint, he said, several of my elderly constituents, because they could not get on trains on the metro and the metro had not accommodated for the massive influx of people, several of my constituents were forced to take cabs.
Well, I think Anne would usher them into the nearest shower, wouldn't she?
Yes, she would. That's the whole thing.
Come on. Yeah. Good Lord.
But we can see it, but for them, it's like somebody took some sort of little proto-government ray and just took all the irony out of their brains.
I have to say, this, like, government classes, it's, you know, young people, it's just an eye-opener on what's happening. And most of the time, I leave class shaking my head thinking, what is happening? Because I'm overwhelmed by just the hostility, the ignorance.
But if you want real proof of the end times, Sandra, I think it's probably from Wednesday night's Countdown with Keith Olbermann.
Uh-huh.
It's the segment where he talks about Sarah Palin speaking to her.
Oh, no, he has a whole segment?
Yeah, it's four minutes of comic goodness. And there is footage in there, and here I go talking about the visuals on the radio again. But there is footage in there of Tom DeLay dancing on his little tippy toes in preparation for Dancing with the Stars.
That's coming up, isn't it?
Yeah, but to see that footage is to understand the true meaning of the absurd.
Oh yeah, just the thought of him is absurd. I can't even imagine watching that mess.
You know, I want to turn. I'm going to watch it again, but I'm going to turn the sound down this time, Sandra. And I'm going to cue up the opening song from A Chorus Line. You know, it's kind of like watching the Wizard of Oz and listening to Dark Side of the Moon at the same time. Because I got a feeling that it will sync up perfectly. You know, one singular sensation. And Tom DeLay with his little hands in the air and his wrists bent, up dancing on his toes. Yes!
Oh, no, but Bob Fosse, please, that's funny. That's a funny thought. Hey, listen, the only other thing I wanted to mention to ask you about was, oh, my God, what do you think of, this is really trivial, but this is my life, what about Obama calling Kanye West a jackass?
I don't know. The last time it was beer. What do we get this time, Sandra?
That's what I mean. I just was like, you know, I'm not too sure what to make of that whole episode, except that it was pretty damn funny that he commented on it. I was like, well, you know, everything seems to be by design. So, of course, I'm sort of thinking, oh, what is the background story on this?
But, I mean, has it been referred to as his Sister Soulja moment yet?
Why? Because he's chastising of course, that's the first thing I thought. I'm so horrible. I'm so glad you agree with me, because that was the first thing I thought. I said, oh, shoot, you got to come down on a Negro, don't you, Obama?
That's, yes.
Wrong, right?
Yeah.
I don't want to go there, but since you mentioned it.
How do you not? I mean, the minute I saw that, it was like, 4-3. Sister Soldier.
Well, you know, yeah, but it was just sort of, I just thought, oh my God. So, I have to say, I sort of do feel.
I got it. I know how this works out. I know how this ends.
What's going to happen?
He's going to bring Bill Cosby to the White House to talk to Kanye West about how to be a responsible black man.
That's after you finish paying off all the bitches you got re-drugged and raped, isn't it?
Yeah, Kanye, not Obama or Bill.
I was just
thinking about Bill Cosby out there.
I'm talking about Bill Cosby. He's like,
oh yeah,
sick of him. He has a lot of nerve after, you know, all his payouts. Hello.
Oh, I hadn't read about so much of those, but.
Oh, no, that's what I'm talking about. This fool settled up with several women, quite a few ducats, and he's preaching to poor black people? Uh-uh.
Oh, I'm sorry. I plead my pre-existing ignorance.
Oh, right. Well, you know.
No, it's since it's pre-existing, it's not covered on my ignorance policy.
That's right. But a lot of times, that sort of stuff, you know, the black elite, they kind of circle the wagons. But Bill Cosby got accused of drugging and attacking several women, and they all backed down, but there was a payout. That equals guilty to me. in my little twisted world, I'm like, okay, you're an a-hole, and you're telling poor people how they should live? F you. Anyway.
All right, Sandra, what a Friday you've gotten going.
Okay, take care.
Later. Bye.
Bye.
Oh, God, now, see, that we still haven't done the details behind the reason that Kanye West was mentioned, so we have not violated my fundamental rule of no talking about the Kanye West incident. Okay? Onward we go. Nope. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Brother Bob.
Hey, Brother Luke.
Well, let's get a couple things out of the way. You were a minute ago looking at colleges.
Yes.
May I suggest the University of the South at Sewanee?
Well, you know, when we were talking with Cassie and I said, there is this lovely little school in Tennessee, that is exactly what I was talking about. And I have mentioned Sewanee on a number of occasions.
It's a beautiful place to go visit. I mean, it really is. Because it's out in the middle of nowhere.
it's a beautiful place to matriculate, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, they've only got like 1,500 or 1,600 students. I mean, that's it. I mean, it's not that big a school, but it does well.
And then, you know, I was thinking of Sewanee when I mentioned Tennessee. And, of course, in mentioning Kentucky, I was thinking of Berea.
Okay.
And then Tennessee also has another excellent, excellent small private college, Tusculum.
Yes.
Tusculum is another good one.
You know, it just depends what you want to find. There's a lot of nice little colleges around. And like you said, any kid getting out of high school, first thing I tell them, go to a junior college. That first 2 years, don't go to a big college because you're just wasting. You know, you're spinning your wheels. You're going to be in a basic English class with 300 of your closest and dearest friends listening to somebody on a TV.
Yeah, your closest and dearest strangers.
Yeah. Well, let's see. Let's get on to the fun parts of life. The one I sent you the other day, it's amazing how no one seems to be talking about a whole lot about the fact that the photographer who took that nice picture of Addison Graves Wilson just happened to be aiming his camera right at Mr. Wilson.
And you know what? I mentioned that toward the end of the program. I think it was Wednesday because I'd seen that story that you sent along, and it was from Psychology Today, and it engendered an off-air email exchange with someone, namely David from Tennessee, who knows his cameras. And David's not willing to entirely get on board, if I understand.
I don't know if it is or not, but it just seems awful odd that even the cameras from the networks didn't have it. You know, they had to hunt and find somebody that had the picture.
And, you know, it's in that blog post, it notes that it's either credited Agence France-Presse, maybe Reuters, and then the actual name of the photographer. And the one question I would like answered was the guy shooting video or was the guy shooting stills?
That's what I mean. When you read it, it doesn't give you all the answers, but it gives you a couple of good questions. You know, it's like say, I just want to know now if he just happened to be dumb luck checking his camera and be aimed in that direction, congratulations. But it just seems awful convenient.
Well, it does, and one of the things that David pointed out was that if it is such that somebody tipped him off, he will never give up his source and never admit it because that's a career photo.
Oh yeah. Let's see. The one I saw today where somebody wrote in, I think it was on one of the blogs at Washington Post where they were all discussing the Beck article in Time. And somebody brought up the fact that said, what how long is it going to be before the pig man decides he has to drop Beck down a couple of notches?
Well, and that's kind of weird because, you know, the rodeo clown has been having, or at least once that I know of, the pig man on the program.
I know, but you want to.
And I can't tell who's trying to glom whom.
That's what I mean. You know how he is. Big man is when somebody else starts getting more press than he does. That person must be stopped.
Yeah, he described in that New York Times Magazine article. He said something reasonably decent about Sean Hannity when he was asked about Michael Savage. He said, "Guy's not even in my rearview mirror." And when asked about O'Reilly, said, "Oh, come on, this guy's a clown. Somebody's got to say it."
Yeah.
You know, I can't imagine talking that way about the people doing this on the liberal side of things. You know, because everybody brings something valid and valuable to the table. Tom Hartman does. I worship at Malloy's Shrine. Stephanie's delightful. Even Ed Schultz. Even Ed Schultz is, you know, he
occasionally.
Well, no, he's getting a message out to somebody that it matters to.
But that's what I mean. He's, you know, it's like I say, we're not all just all in the same thing. We're a spectrum on the left too. You know what I mean? There's people on what you'd call the conservative left. You know what I mean? And people in the moderate, and people on the liberal left. And like I say, Ed appeals to the people on the conservative left, and that's fine. I mean, it's like I say, we don't. Not one person speaks for everybody. You know, there's different degrees of liberal. You know, and some people can listen to Malloy and enjoy him. I do, but I know some people listen to Malloy and it kind of turns them off a little bit because he's a little bit in their face. And there's some people that just aren't going to take that. But, you know, but that's okay. That's part of the world. If you want to talk to somebody now about medical, and I got thinking about this the other day, the person who I think, and he's been writing some now, that I think we need to follow along on this is Garrison Keillor.
Well, you know, he did recently have a stroke, so.
Yeah. Well, he's got an article. I sent it to you from the Chicago Tribune.
Right, yeah.
And as I say, it's interesting to hear somebody going through the medical experience right now and sort of getting updates from him on how his treatment and all that is. I'm glad he's out of the hospital right now, you know, but he's still being treated. But, you know, and it's interesting just at this time to see somebody who can speak to it from a firsthand experience. You know, here's what's going on in the world, folks, in medical. You know, here's how you're treated.
Yeah, when you've got good coverage, like one presumes that Garrison Keillor has.
Oh yeah, but you know what I mean. But even he with the good coverage, you know, there's a lot of stuff where they just sort of let you sit and wait and don't tell you what's going on. You know, that's a big chunk of it. Is half the time with medical, it's you know, if somebody comes out and tells you what the problem is, that's fine. But half the times they don't tell you, your mind will take off like a runaway stallion, you know, and by the time you're done, you've already got yourself in the grave.
Well, you know, and this is the talent that Garrison Keillor has. He says, the doctor who saw me in the ER wrote in her report, nice 67-year-old male, flat affect, awake, alert, and appropriate. I had appeared with slurred speech and a balloon in my head, had driven myself to United Hospital in St. Paul, parked in no parking, walked in, and was triaged right into a neurologist who trundled me into the MRI space-time cyclotron for 50 minutes of banging and whanging, which produced a picture of the stroke in the front of my brain. So off to the Mayo Clinic I went in the St. Mary's Hospital Neurology ICU and was wired up to monitors. A large day in a nice 67-year-old man's life.
You know, it's like sometimes when people go back, and if you ever watch the movie Patch Adams with Robin Williams, you know, it's like he says, when he's treating the one fellow, he says, I'm not here to treat the disease, I'm here to treat you. You have the disease. But I'm not taking the disease out, working on it, I'm working on you. You just happen to be carrying it at the time.
Right, and Keillor, you know, kind of addresses that. He says, when the doctor talks about how you must go on a powerful blood thinner lest a stray clot turn your fine intellect into a cheese omelet, you must now accept being 67 years old and do as he says. Mortality has just bitten you in the butt.
And it's looking for a place to get a better grip.
And exactly. And the thing, you know, again, perhaps we lose a little bit, Luke, in the fact that we're not talking about defeating mortality here. We are talking, especially with, for instance, the numbers out of this Harvard study, 45,000 people per year. You know, that's, let's see, we are at 22 people dead in the United States since this show started. Mm-hmm. Just kind of keeping track.
Well, you know, it's like something I heard years and years ago that I can't remember if it was MASH or something like that where they were talking about. I said, just remember, you're born dying. It's just a question of when and where.
Yeah, and the necessity of which.
Yeah.
You know, Keillor says a neurologist, as I left, a neurologist shook my hand and said, I hope you know how lucky you are. That was pretty clear, he says, as I walked down the hall towing my IV tower and saw the casualties of serious strokes. Here I was sashaying along like a survivor of Pickett's Charge who'd suffered a sprained wrist. That's one of those moments. That's one of those moments where, you know, it's a stroke and you survive because you get adequate care. But if you're one of those 45,000, maybe you just die.
Mm-hmm. And somebody will find you later on. We hope, we pray.
But when he says things like, I went to United Hospitals and St. Mary's is a research and teaching hospital, and he's gone to Mayo Clinic, and you know, one, he's in Minnesota, so, you know, great, that's where the Mayo is.
Yeah.
You know, you could probably get similar results if you happen to be in Cleveland. Or if you're in Baltimore and get to go to Johns Hopkins, or in New York and you get to go to Cedars-Sinai or Mass Gen or something, you know, one of those.
Like you say, sometimes it's a matter. Like I say, it's just a matter of where you are when it happens.
Right, but the thing is, we have by cooperating with the the avarice-driven agony injury. Illness, misery, and death industry. We've created a system whereby that is not that kind of treatment is not necessarily available. It ain't available to me.
Yeah.
You're lucky. You know, you're in East Tennessee there, in nearish Knoxville. You know, you've got some sort of UT medical center there that probably knows how to deal with this.
One or two of them. Yeah.
Yeah.
One or two good hospitals here in town.
But, you know, I can take it. I can take you to places in West Virginia where it's a, and you know, look, there's places in East Tennessee where it's a death sentence.
Well, like I say, just up the street from where my mom and dad's house was, is the old public elementary school that is the housing that houses Stan Brock's outfit. You know, that goes out and does these rural setups, you know, and treats people, brings in, you know, the doctors and such. I can't think what the name of it is right now. Oh, shoot. But you know what I mean? He goes out in these things where they go out into the, not quite you want to say the Appalachians per se, but you know what I mean? Into the places where if they're lucky, they've got a GP and that's about it, you know.
I think there's a couple of places within geographical statistical Appalachia where a dentist or a doctor. Oh, I think it's over in Virginia. A few dentists and doctors. No, it's dentists. It's dentists, Luke,
okay.
Who show up once a year and, you know, treat 2,000 people who don't have dental care over the course of 3 days.
And it's one of those things. It's like. You know, it's like, you know, when we had that thing earlier in the year, you know, when the people from ABC came down and did their fun little thing, you know, it's like, well, you know.
They call it Mountain Dew Mouth.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, it's like saying we hate to admit it, but there's places all over the place we can find that.
Well, yeah, and, you know, I think Diane Sawyer and ABC News have a little egg on their face from that now since the New York Times article came out this past weekend that said, they call it poisoned water mouth because that very issue was dealt with. You know, her son brushed his teeth 3 times, 4 times after every meal, you know, per the dentist's instructions. And the more he brushed, the more his teeth rotted.
Yeah. You know, it's one of the, the thing I was thinking of is called Remote Area Medical Volunteer Corps. And they go out, you know, and do these medical relief things where they show up for the health people, the dental people, the eye people.
Right.
You know, and, you know, and visit an area and, you know, get the people to come down. You know, come on down if you need to see them, and they treat them and do it. But,
well, you know, Garrison Keillor really did put he said it so much nicer than anything I try to say. He said, rich or poor, young or old, we all face the injustice of life. It ends too soon, and statistical probability is no comfort. We are all in the same boat, you and me and ex-Governor Sarah Palin and Congressman Joe Wilson, and wealth and social status do not prevail against disease and injury. And now we must reform our health insurance system so that it reflects our common humanity. It is not decent that people avoid seeking help for want of insurance. It is not decent that people go broke trying to get well. You know it and I know it. Time to fix it. Compare that, if you will, Luke, and I know you're going to know what I'm talking about, with that bizarre drug-addled screed that Glenn Beck wrote when he was on some pain cocktail after having hemorrhoid surgery,
in which
he had had his nether regions worked on by a competent surgeon in a for-profit hospital, and then turned the weird little essay into a screed against, lo and behold, government-run medicine. When no government-run medicine touched his behind, literally.
You know, it's one of those things that, you know, oh, we love the, you know, him out there just crying about this stuff. And it's like, yeah, but it had nothing to do with you. You know, quit sitting there telling people, you know, that you know how bad it is. You don't know, you know, him.
Yeah, quit peeing on people's shoes and tell them it's raining.
Yeah. Okay, let me get a couple of things. I know you got plenty more people to talk to. Two things. One, we're sorry to see in all of our other news that the gentleman who liked to tell poems has passed on.
Help.
Henry Gibson.
Oh, I must have missed that.
Yeah, he passed away this past week. And like I say, I just always remember, that's the first time I remember ever seeing him was doing Laugh-In and walk out with that plastic daffodil and would do the poem and then turn around and walk back off.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's the sort of taking a break there in Laugh-In. So he'd do that, just give him a chance to think about things for a second. But that and the other thing I saw this week that did not get too much thing, did you see the judge who was presiding over a case that Miss Orly Tate,
Tate,
brought it before him, and he essentially told her, said, if you ever show up here again, you're going to jail.
No.
He had another one where they were trying to claim Obama wasn't from a U.S. citizen. And the judge essentially said, this is a frivolous case. If you show back up again with another one of these, said, you don't want to appear in front of me with another one of these cases. Because
I hope she does. I hope she does.
Well, you know, she had another one of these, I don't know who the young lady was. I don't remember if it was. I think it was a lady. Had gone up there about not wanting to be sent to Afghanistan because she didn't think it was a just order.
Right, right, right.
And, you know, essentially he just read her up one side and down the other, just, you know, essentially said, don't appear in front of me again. So it's nice to hear.
Come on back, Orly. Come on back, honey. That was a challenge. The gauntlet's been thrown down. You got to go back, Orly.
Oh, please, yeah. You know.
I just can't imagine that somebody gave that woman a law license.
It must have been one of those mail-in things, you know, can you draw the picture of the deer?
Yeah, draw the ambulance, Chaser.
Draw the ambulance back door, and if you can, you can send $29.95, and we'll send you a diploma.
Straight out of The Simpsons. See these books? They're not fake. They're all real law books and have real law stuff inside them. I haven't read any.
But
if we don't win your case, your pizza's free.
Some of these people you see like that, you know, like Dr. Laura, I'm just getting her going, who gave her a license? Please somebody tell me who gave her a license. Or is she just sort of like one of them doctors that's like,
well, that's the
like
thing. She is an EDD. Dr. Laura has never so much as put on a Band-Aid.
Oh, okay.
She is a doctorate of education. And that's not that, you know, she disparages the degree more than I ever could.
Well, like I say, it's one of those people that, you know, when you every once in a while just want to call, find out where she got it from and call and say, have you all asked for it back and asked for the refund?
Well, they would if they could be found. That's the thing. It came off the back of a matchbook.
All right, but I tell you what, I've been on too long because I know you got other people to talk to.
All right, well, you heard Luke. I'm rooting tomorrow.
Oh, but let me get to that. I'm sorry, before we leave. Our only hope I see is did you see what happened to the UCLA quarterback at the end of the game, near the end of the game?
Yeah.
When he tried going around that one time and he got hit by a freight train.
Yeah.
We're just hoping Mr. Tebow tries that a few times because there's one fellow on one side named Barry, and there's another fellow on the other side that's a freshman. I cannot think of his name right now. And
I'd like for Tim Tebow to get to be real good friends with them for about 15 minutes, first quarter, and you know after that, Coach, I've had enough. Never mind that Heisman. I'm leaving now.
So as I say, I think for a while the defense can hold them. You know what I mean? If they go at them. As long as they don't pull back into prevent or something, you know what I mean.
Oh, and by the way, just to follow up on what you said about Orly Tate, our buddy Marty says Tate's called the judge corrupt, and another judge has filed a complaint against her to the California bar. So hot diggity. Now if we could just get somebody to file a Pennsylvania bar complaint against John Yoo, we'd be well on the way.
He's one, like I say, he's the one that needs to be in the orange jumpsuit. You know,
no, I just want to give him the Khalid Sheikh Mohammed treatment and ask him afterward if it's torture.
I was going to say, let's keep him up for 2 or 3 weeks straight. You know, let him sleep for 5 minutes and wake him up again, throw cold water on him. Let's do that for about 2 weeks and just ask him what he thinks, if he can think at that point.
Well, you know, I heard a report the other day, and it was one of those breathtaking, you know, this can't be America moments. And it was one of those depressing, you know, come on, please stop being the Bush administration, Obama administration moments. The Obama administration Justice Department has picked up where the Bush administration left off, responding to arguments in court by defense counsel for one of the Guantanamo concentration camp inmates. They're trying to get his case heard in federal court, saying that the kangaroo court tribunals are unconstitutional, and the Obama administration Justice Department is arguing that the federal court, and this is a real eye whirler for me, the federal court has no jurisdiction because it's a military matter. That was the Obama administration Justice Department is arguing that.
Not if he wasn't in a uniform, I don't think it is. But
I'm not trying to deliberately be hard on the Obama administration. But, you know, they got to put some psychic distance between the Department of Justice under Eric Holder and the Department of Justice under Torture Boy Gonzalez.
I agree. It's one of those things. I'm sorry, you know, that when Eric Holder walked in there, he should have said, you know, should have just said, get me the, you know, the personnel list. We're going to go down and see who doesn't work here anymore.
Well, you know, I see this stuff, and I just want to look at him and go, okay, Eric, buddy. I'm sorry, Mr. Holder, based on the previous conversation with Cassie. Yeah. Mr. Holder, Mr. General. Did John Ashcroft sneak in and pour his Crisco on you?
Say, were there electrodes attached to your chair when you sat down or something? You know.
Yeah, somebody got pictures of you? But
the first thing I'd have done is I'd have got me the official directory of the building, and I'd have said, let's walk down this hall here, and I'll tell you who isn't going to work here tomorrow. You and you and you.
Oh, look, is that a Pat Robertson law degree? That, we got a great new assignment for you. It's down in the basement, and it's your new office will be the janitor's closet next to the bathroom.
Yeah, I say that's probably about the first thing I'd have said. I said, anybody here with a degree from Liberty or Heritage, we have new assignments for them. Oh yes, we're going to put them out on checking Superfund sites
with no hazmat suits.
Well, you're going to get some suits, but don't worry about those little tears in them.
Yeah, you'll be fine.
Don't
you'll be fine.
Settled.
Well, like I said, I'm rooting tomorrow.
All right, bud. Hey, who y'all playing tomorrow?
No, it's Auburn.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well,
it looks like they got a good year this year.
Well, you know, they've got that guy from South Dakota Polytechnic or something that none of them wanted, with the real funny name, and we're going to go down there and get our rear ends handed to us.
Oh, I tell you, the other one that I saw this past weekend is, do you wonder what Georgia or South Carolina would be like if they actually had a defense?
I know. But I didn't get to watch it last night, but David did clue me in, and he said, just be glad that Miami's out of the Big East, because you don't want none of these fellas this year.
Oh, that was.
Oh, they went. I watched the highlights later based on what David said, and they just, oh, my God, they made Georgia Tech look like.
Georgia Tech is not a bad team.
That's what everybody says. You know, they were going to be the cream of the ACC this year.
Uh-huh. You know, what's that game 2 weeks ago with them? Played a good game. You know what I mean? But like I say, I watched a little bit of that last night, and it was like, let me go down there. Are you sure the Rock still didn't slip back in and put his uniform back on, you know, from years ago? Or
yeah, but you know what? I got a lot of like for the quarterback at Miami.
Oh yeah, but you know what I mean. It was just that reminded me a whole lot of the old Miami teams. You know, just like I say, just chiseled in stone. stay out of the way.
Our coach, Bill Stewart, whom I like to refer to as Old Muley, because he looks like a pole-axed mule half the time on the sidelines. They're reporting, the Associated Press reporting, West Virginia coach Bill Stewart has a prediction for the Mountaineers' game against Auburn.
I see a track meet.
Does it mean he's going to be running away?
Yeah, well, I know. Oh, Gene Chizik is the Auburn coach, by the way.
Ah, yes.
Yeah.
All right, but let me let you go on.
All right, you take it easy, Luke.
Keep bragging on forever.
Oh, well, I know.
All
right. Later. Bye now.
Bye.
Hey, it's Friday. It's September. If I'm not talking about college football, there's something profoundly wrong with me. You understand? Let's see. No? Hey, welcome to the program.
Those damn pineapple thieves!
They said you're going to take all the pills and keep them for yourself.
Yeah.
I said, go sit and be sick on your own front stoop.
And the diaper pins in their ears. They should turn that into, like, an opera. They should get that 12-hour set and set it to music like they did with that Alberto Gonzalez.
Oh, wow. Let's don't and say we didn't.
I heard it was an actually good opera. They had critical acclaim for it. I haven't read any reviews. But I did want to mention something, a little bit of pop culture. The first thing, I'm actually going to turn the Kanye story into something meaningful.
Be careful, because you're messing with my oath.
All right. But before I do that, I wanted to give a recommendation to you, because I know you'll like this. Have you heard about Daryl Hall's website?
No.
It's called Live at Daryl Hall's, and what he does is he invites musical guests every month. They have a meal, and you get to hear 8 songs live on the video. They have a podcast. Last month's guest was Smokey Robinson. This month's guest was Todd Rundgren. I'm telling you, Bob, I haven't seen anything like it. It's really creative. It's really original. And if you guys want to check it out, it's liveatdaryls.com, and you will be impressed.
Okay, now, there are multiple spellings for Daryl.
Yeah. I think it's D-A-R-R-Y-L.
That's what I'm thinking, yeah.
I don't think it's... I know
Where's Oates?
Who has one R.
Where's Oates?
Oh yeah, you know what? Oates does his own thing, and he also he stopped by a few times already. But the way Daryl Hall works with other musicians, it's really a joy to see. I showed my dad it, and he was really impressed by it. So he's a good judge of character when it comes to music.
Cool.
So for those people who want to check that out. Now, moving on. This has to do with Kanye West, but not the way you guys think it has to do with. What it has to do with, let me send what I'm sending you right now so you can see it, and we can play along this horrific game that I'm about to show you, Bob. I call it the miseducation of Kanye. Now, the reason why I call that is because a person has spotted out something very disturbing on Twitter, and I want you to take a look at this blog link so the home players can play along at home. Incidentally, I heard Wolf Blitzer got a negative 4,000 on Jeopardy. Let's all laugh now.
You're kidding. Oh.
No, I will send you the link to it. It's very interesting.
Oh, I will, and I will so forward that to Eugene Finnerman, too.
Oh, I knew you would. And the funny thing about it, you can see his face, and he says to him, Wolf, We don't usually have this happen to us. Oh, and you'll laugh too, because guess who was the champion on the show? Andy Richter. But anyways, he deserves it. I love Andy. Anyways,
And Andy's not a dull knife in the drawer either.
Oh, I know. And he says to Wolf, he goes, now we can't have you at negative 4,000. I kid you not. This is like surrealness. He goes, so we're going to give you 1,000. Just like in the CNN world. We're going to give you a story even though you don't deserve it, Wolf.
Anyway. God, it's like a sympathy double.
Yes. So anyways, the main point of this story that I wanted you to do, Harry Allen, it's a great blog to check out.
I'm looking at it.
Okay, he stumbled on something that I find very interesting for a number of reasons. We talked about anonymous racism before on this program via YouTube. I believe we've had this discussion before. Now, what we see here is we see abject racism for hatred of a media figure, but something very alarming, the face and the names. And if you look at the ages, or and if you look at the faces, you can tell they're young people, But what's really alarming is the fact how openly they're doing this on Twitter, because if you type in Kanye and the N-word, you will come up with, I kid you not, people, every second or every 10 seconds, a new match comes up.
Ooh.
We're in deep water. I mean, look at the... I mean, if you want to share some without the N-word, Bob, go ahead, if whichever ones stick out to you.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. They've all got the N-word in them.
I know, but you don't say the N-word. That's the
yeah,
point.
Let me go back here.
Yeah.
Oh, where'd I put it? Oh, there it is. Let's see. Yeah, Twitter's. And, yeah, this you're right, David. This is not violating the Kanye West rule.
Yeah, I know.
Let's see. Is Kanye the new OJ?
That's the headline.
The headline for the story is Kanye the new OJ? The real haters appear in order to protect Taylor Swift's white womanhood from the rape of the rapper. So get an idea of where the guy's going. Twitter one. Kanye West is an effing nerd. It's guys like him that make you all look bad. You know, you people.
Yeah.
Right. That's from K. Larson 5150, otherwise known as Kayla. Tony STTW, Kanye West, you dirty F-word. Kanye's a stupid, racist N-word. Somebody pop a cap in his ass, please. That's from David Gerds.
Yeah.
Digital X says Kanye is a dumb N. And you know,
I just thought of some shit, Bob. And this is a surreal moment. They're doing this from work with their names out there and their faces. Some of these are definitely coming from work. How stupid is our population?
Well, you know, there was a burglar caught the other day who stopped in mid-burgle to check his Facebook page.
That reminds me.
You know, Sue has said it. It's become a freaking mantra on this program. You
yeah.
can't fix stupid. But what surprises me out of this, David, is
yeah.
you know, I could have, and I would have hated myself, but I could, you know, I probably could have lit up a couple of hours of this program doing the Kanye story.
Oh, I know.
And I just know I won't. That you can't make me. You know, it's not like I got Keith Olbermann's boss who says, you know, come on, it's got to be your number one story, Keith. Okay, you the check cleared this week. Damn it. I could have levied some level of criticism, I'm sure.
I think what's crazy about this, though, Bob, is that with Twitter's search engine function that they have now, if you were to type those two words, it literally comes up every 5 seconds. They just can't help saying it.
And that's the thing. It's 2009.
I know.
I guess the best news that I heard that had the Taylor Swift in the sentence was the news that David from South Carolina, another member of the David Brigade, David from South Carolina sent to tell me that the drive-by truckers had surpassed album sales of Taylor Swift, which I thought was... Yeah, go guys. There's hope.
That's a big thing.
And
wow.
And yeah, I mean that says something because you know she's selling a bunch of them. But anyway, what was there to say? It was a classless, probably intoxicated, alcohol infused moment. So what? At the Video Music Awards, so what? Squared and cubed. Okay.
Yeah.
Spoiled celebrities behaving in character. Oh, really? Boom. End of that ends it.
Right.
But you know, there's no end of it. I don't know how many hours were probably dedicated to that dumbass story. But at no point did that word ever enter I would hope. Any liberal radio listener's mind. You know, because there are so many other good ones, David. Moron. Jackass.
Yeah.
Fool. Idiot. You know, pissant. If you want to go down that road.
Apparently, Harry Allen's been getting some heat from this story because of the fact that he put a lot of Twitter names on blast, but to to me, it's like you put this out in the public. You're the one twittering this over and over, and they've actually, some have actually responded to him and called him the N-word, which is another surreal moment. These supposedly nice people, which Harry Allen hasn't done anything except point out the fact that
he busted him.
An ignorant racist word.
And I can't tell you the number of posts on this thing that you're showing me here, David.
Exactly. I know. I mean, if we had a video,
But there's a subset. There's a subset, yeah. And it's worth noting. There's a whole bunch of people on this who are using the old, I call it the Robert Byrd defense.
Yeah.
Remember when Robert Byrd went on Fox News many years ago and said, "Mama always told me that there were black and white." Okay. There's a bunch of people. Well, here's one. There are black people and there are N-word. I hate N-word. Kanye West is truly a N-word. Let's see. OPS, you don't have to be black to be a N-word. It was just a coincidence with Kanye.
That's from
a person named Steph who calls herself Skinny Bitch.
Yeah, that's great.
Irony, Dr. Freud, white courtesy phone.
But Bob, I think the scariest thing is more than half of these, I would say, okay, maybe 40 or 50% of these, they have their real damn names. They have their addresses.
Oh, by the way, you have started a thing.
Yeah.
I have to tell you, I just heard from Michael, Kid A. He said, yeah. I heard Pineapple Thieves are opening for Cal Zero next Saturday at CBGB's.
Oh, wow. That's
two great band names.
Yeah, that is a great band name.
You know,
maybe that could be the name of John Fox's solo album, The Pineapple Thief Theory. But anyway,
Pineapple Thieves are opening for Cal Zero.
The other story I wanted to mention, I just wanted people to know. Oh, by the way, while we're talking about this, just so people understand what it is I'm getting at, there are probably at least 100 or 200 more entries of Kanye and the N-word from self-assuming, innocent people of all ages. With using their real name. I don't know. That's too far down the rabbit hole for me.
Is it? I mean, in Teabag Land 2009, is it really?
No, not that, because there are a lot of people who are, you'd be surprised how many people are using the N-word who are white, who are Obama supporters, if you click on some of their Twitter links. I guess what I'm saying is when anger and resentment comes out, that's the word a lot of people feel safe to use on the internet, with their face picture and their name right next to it. And to me, it's like, that's gotta be like a really sobering, wake up call for the people who are, black on Twitter and who are, into Kanye or who aren't into Kanye.
And then, I mean, just to be fair.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to, then there's Barack Obama himself, reading his book, Dreams from My Father. You know, he read the audio book, in his own words, we get this.
Yeah. Shit's getting way too complicated for me.
So, you know.
Yeah.
Again, there's that journalism dichotomy that I've referenced on so many occasions, David. It is one thing. I mean, frankly, I could, under the guise of mere reportage,
right?
There are words that I could and would use if the moment demanded them. For instance, you know, I think maybe America would have been better off, except for our stupid, censorious FCC rules, if when that Newsweek reporter was present in the Oval Office for the meeting with the cabinet, when somebody asked George Bush, and this was like, you know, months before he ever attacked Iraq, back when he was saying, all we want is peace with Iraq and for Saddam to disarm. That, you remember that?
Yeah.
And I think it was Time or Newsweek. Some reporter was in there, you know, for a photo op or whatever, and somebody said, Mr. President, what about Iraq? What about Saddam Hussein? What about Iraq? And at that moment, George W. Bush who was, for all intents and purposes, the President of the United States of America, even if by fiat of the Supreme Court of the United States, George W. Bush, Christian man, follower of Jesus, answered, and I quote, see, this is that journalism moment, fuck Saddam, we're going to take him out. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, that's, it would have been, in my view, it would have been entirely legitimate if the entire world would have reported that moment without the F-dash-dash-dash, and if people on reporting on FCC monitored and censored airwaves could have used the whole word, because it gave more than adequate indication of just what a punk and just what a crook and just what a nasty little jug-eared monster George W. Bush was.
Oh, I totally agree. I just wanted to.
But instead, here you've got just ordinary people tweeting on their little phones from work. F that N word.
Yeah, I know, and it's.
But it's evidence, David, of the pathetic quality of these tiny little lives that so many people lead. You know, again, I don't give a rat's rear end about this story.
Exactly. Yeah.
But look at the way the dead from the neck up general American public respond to it, for heaven's sakes.
I think the biggest problem is it's so digestible, and MTV is so willing to play the game with their celebrities and getting the headlines, and you know, whether you have MTV or whether you have the Oscars or whether you have you know, any of the major TV networks, it seems to be like they really do enjoy getting people all. They find it amusing that they get people riled up over something so junk food.
Well, consider this, if you will. Our pal Reverbo, sent along a story earlier today.
Mm-hmm.
Subject line: Truth Dig. Nader was right. Liberals are going nowhere with Obama. And Reverbo's comment on it was, just what I needed, another Chris Hedges buzz killer, so of course I decided to share it with you. And in the course of this piece, Ralph Nader makes a comment that, well, Lord, how am I going to disagree with it? It's something that we have alluded to a number of times, various and sundry, on this program. And let me see if I can find it real quick. Come on, computer, don't lock up. Here it is. There comes a point when the public imbibes the ultimatum of the plutocracy, Nader said when asked about public apathy. They have bought into the belief that if it protests, it will be brutalized by the police. If they have Muslim names, they will be subjected to Patriot Act treatment. This has scared the hell out of the underclass. They will be called terrorists. And okay, and this is where you mentioned MTV and their response, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, Ralph says, this is the third television generation. They have grown up watching screens. They have not gone to rallies. Those are history now. They hear their parents and grandparents talk about marches and rallies. They have little toys and gizmos that they hold in their hands. They have no idea of any public protest or activity. It is a tapestry of passivity. They have been broken, Nader said of the working class. How many times have their employers threatened them with going abroad? How many times have they threatened the workers with outsourcing? The polls on job insecurity are record high by those who have employment, and the liberal intelligentsia have failed them. They, the intellectuals, have bought into carping and making lecture fees as the senior fellow at the Institute of so-and-so. Look at the top 50 intelligentsia. Not one of them supported our campaign, Nader says of his own. Not one of them has urged for street action and marches. Now, whether they support the campaign or not doesn't mean that they have failed. But he is pointing out a fundamental failure of the so-called liberal world to have a meaningful discussion and a meaningful dialogue with working class America, of which I am a part.
Right.
And the underclass, of which I am a part. And many of us are. And, you know, some of the far more so than I do not speak to my own qualifications. So many people have been thrown under the bus, kicked to the curb, whatever euphemism you want to use, by this economic miracle of the last probably 15, 20 years, because I don't just limit it to Bush. I mean, right. You know, NAFTA was signed in what, 1995? Yeah, come on. That you've got fabulously intelligent human beings who have been completely trivialized by whatever it is you want to call this thing that passes for this phony baloney three-part hard Monty scheme that passes for an economy happens to be. Man, sorry, I wasn't breathing for a minute there.
That's all right. You know, Bob, it is kind of bewildering the fact that how much time was spent on when we have a ship that's taken on water, how much time was taken on Joe Wilson. And for those people who think it's wise to spend any more time talking about Joe Wilson, you ought to take a trip to joewilsonforcongress.com and see he's up to 1.7 million.
And yeah, keep talking.
Yeah, and see all the donors from all around the United States. I mean, I hate to tell the Democrats and the liberals, but it was an orchestrated trap. You should have spent like 2 minutes on it, said that was rude of you. I don't know what got into you to do that.
Yeah, well, aren't you a rude little jackass? Next.
Yeah, that,
anybody surprised?
That's what now that's what he should have said off camera. That's what instead of calling Kanye a jackass. My point is the fact that it seems like every little issue is taking us off track. It doesn't take a supernova like Michael Jackson or anything like that.
No.
For a media event.
You are really treading on shifting sands. You at this point, you realize that, right?
I know it takes but I did want to mention one last thing to make it on an interesting note. I think you'll find this interesting. An engraved gemstone was found with the likeness of Alexander the Great, and it was 1 millimeter long. Don't ask me how he found it, but he was looking very carefully, and they have it's like branded on the gemstone like a Nike symbol or something. So if you ever want to question, who was the first pioneer to brand himself on jewelry, I guess you could say Alexander the Great was the first.
Yeah, back in the Macedonian hood, they called him A Great.
A Great. Oh, well, Bob, I'm gonna let you go. But before I do, all I can say is, you know how the Seinfeld's catchphrase was, "Those pretzels are making me thirsty." My catchphrase is, "Those damn pineapples."
Damn them all to hell.
Oh, but before I go, did you watch Extract yet?
No, I have not. I have not. I will get to it. I got a weekend coming.
All right, cool. I'm looking forward to hearing what you think of it.
All right, I will do my dead level best.
All right, you have a great weekend.
All right, take care, David.
Football.
All right, bye now.
Later.
How about that? David did the Kanye West story without doing the Kanye West story. There is some serious zen happening on this program. Let's see what's going on. Whoopsie, okay. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, boss.
Hey, Gene, what's up, brother?
Well, first of all, why? Because I was just reading the other day that they found, in fact, it was last night, they found these millimeter measurement tools in Iran from ages ago, like over 1,000 years.
Oh, no kidding.
No kidding. It was there. I was tempted to send it to you, but I got busy. Anyway, so I guess that's where they built that.
Well, whenever you find those stories, that just, you know, when you're not busy, because I do know you read the Internet every day.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, don't resist the temptation to send it along.
I know.
Because those just give me my delightful little geek moments, and I love them. I just love them so.
Yeah. Anyway, I just had some quick personal news. I've been raising this pepper plant.
Yeah.
Over the summer, and I'll be darned. I went out today, and I've got little tiny peppers that have sprouted out from the flowers that were on there.
Oh, beautiful! What kind of peppers?
Yay! I think it's bell. I'm not really sure. I didn't think I wasn't even sure that I wasn't even going to be able to grow them. So it's like maybe I can avoid Well, not from one pepper plant, but next summer or next year, I'll really start to put in some other stuff. So, you know, any little bit helps as far as the food bill goes.
Oh, yeah, and a fresh sweet pepper tastes so much better. Do you like cottage cheese, Gene?
I'll eat it. I'm not too great on it, but
I'll go ahead and say this then. Something as simple as a fresh bell pepper sliced in half with the core and the seeds out of it, just with a little smattering of cottage cheese with some salt and pepper in it, heaven on earth.
Ooh, sounds good. Does sound good. One other thing, and then I'll let you be because I'm waiting on the Mac. I read that piece by Atheist, What Civil War Would Mean in America.
Yeah, I was going to try to share that later in the evening. It's up at the website. Yeah, go ahead.
That was very good. I was glad he put it up, and I'm actually thinking of putting it on some of my other websites that I go to, because I know that kind of not that I ever wanted anything like that to happen anyway, but it made me do a lot of thinking, basically, because I always, you know, it kind of gives me a little bit of justification in a way of, if I have to move, now I can kind of say, well, it was either move or do something really stupid. So, anyway, I know that sounds kind of weird, but I was glad I read it. So, you need to share that one. That's a good one.
I absolutely will. And I'll do it when we're done with the call here.
Okay, I will let you go. I hear my train coming, I think, so.
Oh, well.
You have a good day.
And safe travels to you, Gene.
I will.
All right, bye now. News Ninja Gene, calling from Oregon. And what he is referring to is an essay by the Foxhole Atheist, otherwise known as Joe, who is not Joe Vecchio. Different Joe. See, we got a Joe team, we got a David team. See how it works? But this is Joe the Foxhole Atheist, who has a really, really nicely put together essay that's been put up at headonradionetwork.com called This Is What Civil War in America Means. I highly commend it to you. Got a couple of blinking lights. I'll share a little bit of it after we clear the phones, if in fact we do manage to do that, this being Friday. Remember, you know, tomorrow no conversation radio until Sunday night with John Fox and All Foxed Up. Great weekend schedule coming, though. We've got horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner, and we've got Rick Smith. Two fresh shows from him coming the weekend. We've got another encore presentation of Night Sounds with Billy Shears. A nice little weekend schedule, and working on more. Everything on the horn is put together by people who have jobs in some other corner of the world. Not necessarily geographic, although that too, but compartmentalized lives in which there are things that happen on and for the horn, and there are things that happen that they do to keep the lights on. So, yeah. Let's go to the phones and waste no time in doing so on this Front Porch Friday. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, Gonzo, greetings. You might have a lot of Davids and Ricks.
Ain't got but one Spike.
And Joe's, yeah. Well, I guess technically I could maybe fall into the Joe category also, but I'm better known as Spike. Unless you want to get punched, then you can call me Joe if you don't mind getting punched.
Right, because you've got a Joe problem insofar as you refuse to be a guy named Joe because your name really is Joe, as opposed to the guys not named Joe who have misappropriated the term.
Well, that, and also because of my last name, if I go by my birth first name,
you're mistaken for somebody famous.
Yeah, a D-bag that's famous, no less, not even a good celebrity. It would be much better if my name was Larry David. I never would have had to get a nickname. I would have ran with that one. But, and that reminds me, you know, before I move on to the more serious stuff, you told that story about the guy who was robbing a house and he had to check his Facebook. Now, one, I'd like to know what was so important he had to check his Facebook in the middle of committing a crime. And two, I wonder, was the song Frolic by Luciano Michelini, or however you say the last name, that is the theme song for Curb Your Enthusiasm, was that playing when the police entered and caught
it? Most assuredly, it most assuredly was on a metaphysical basis at the very least, Spike.
Because as soon as you described that, I'm sitting there, I'm thinking, why does that sound like the end of an episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm? Just remove burglar and put Larry David in. But, oh, good Lord. You know, Twitter is both a great source of entertainment and a great source of disgust with the population of the United States of America.
In other words, it's a generally accurate reflection of this nation.
More or less, yes. All the way down to the fact that most Americans can't really speak in complete sentences anymore.
Look, exactly. You know, we got the Wednesday night spike. We had the 21% of people in New Jersey who are not sure that Barack Obama is the Antichrist, or if he is the Antichrist. And then, then this evening, Cassie gets us started, you know, going west, and 75% of Oklahoma school children do not know that George Washington was the first president. Yeah, what you said.
And you know, and speaking of that one in particular, the thing I'm disappointed is, what were the other answers if they couldn't get Washington? That's what I'd really like to know.
Oh, okay, so you're, wait, this is important, Spike. You're making the leap now that it was a multiple guess test and not just who was the first president of the United States.
Well, I'm thinking a lot of people, and please don't take me the wrong way. I mean, I don't want to stereotype everyone in the South, but I wouldn't be shocked if a lot of Southern children these days would actually answer, especially from what we're seeing these days, would answer Jefferson Davis. I got a feeling a lot of teabaggers kids might be thinking at this point the first president of their country was Jefferson Davis, which by the way, if they actually knew a lot about Jefferson Davis, they'd realize karma really got the Davis family for their involvement with the Civil War. When I went to the Museum of the Confederacy and I did the Confederate White House tour, one, you cannot take pictures or videos in there whatsoever, because it was even asked, well, what if it's not flash photography? And they're like, no, we just don't want pictures of everything in this place out there. It wasn't like there was offensive stuff. They're very, like, nervous these white supremacists might really start, I guess, picking up on things and...
And iconize...
Right. Because the museum's logo isn't the Confederate flag that was, like, on the top of the General Lee and the Dukes of Hazzard, which was the General Johnstone battle flag. Their logo, which is the original Confederate flag, is the one that was easily mistaken for a Union flag in the battlefield.
The one that is actually the stars and bars. See, that's another common misconception. That Confederate battle flag, like, was on the General Lee and flew over the South Carolina State House and so forth. That thing is the Confederate battle flag. But it is frequently referred to as the stars and bars, which it ain't.
Right.
The stars and bars is what you're describing, which looks very, very similar to... the U.S. flag.
Correct. Maybe the Texas flag, too, in a way.
Well, yeah, kind of.
But because it's kind of funny. I mean, and don't get me wrong. When you go to that museum, you do see, obviously, the battle flag there. It's like the museum of that side of the war. It's kind of interesting. They're really a little nervous at that museum that the wrong element might start getting a little wild. And it kind of cracks me up, because then you have the Sons of the Confederacy, which is a more radical group. But when you go on the Internet, a lot, the museum kind of gets lumped in the same category.
Right, and Addison Graves Wilson is a member of the Sons of Confederate Veterans.
And so is Clint Eastwood.
Ew.
At least according to Wikipedia, someone could have made that up, but more often than not, Wikipedia is pretty accurate, actually. Because there's kind of media bias. But, he's another one that's in there. Most of them are pretty obscure, famous names. A lot of Republicans in power in some form of government. But I think...
Do I need to... I mean, I could qualify for membership. Do I need to join and infiltrate?
Ooh, that would be interesting to have a little subversive action from the inside. A little espionage, liberal espionage from the Obama nation. I can hear a conspiracy theory on the Rush Limbaugh show now. The man who wants to segregate school buses. Now,
yeah.
Before I drop an F-bomb, let me take a few breaths.
Letting go now, letting all the F-bombs go. Spike's going to his happy place.
But in the same, you know, I might have recently turned 30, but it wasn't that long ago I was in high school. And I can tell you, any time a fight broke out, it didn't matter what the races of the parties involved in the fight was, guys that are teenagers, and I'm sure your son's probably done it himself as well, when a fight breaks out, you just start, like, getting rowdy, like, you know, cheering. I can't explain it, but guys, from an early age on, we get excited when we see people beating the snot out of each other.
Cavemen.
Race.
It's the caveman gene. It's when the lizard brain takes over.
You know, you might start yelling to kick someone in the nads or, you know, something like that. It becomes entertainment. And it has nothing to do with race. It's more just...
Nice, Spike.
At one time...
Spike, careful. The big sport. Careful, buddy. The Philly's sneaking out, okay? No batteries.
What's that?
No batteries. Philly. Okay. Batteries. No batteries. The Philadelphia and you is sneaking out. You know, kick him in the nads!
Okay. I have to look confused. I'm like Energizer, Norcell.
No, those were Rayovacs, weren't they?
Oh, but you know, and the fact that he gets a free pass all the time when he says this just outrageous stuff. I mean, at least a Klans person is honest about their racism. It doesn't mean I agree, but at least they admit. They hate. I can't stand these people who say, oh, I am not a racist, but we should segregate school buses. Rewind the tape. Let's go back. You know, that on Twitter, there was a libertarian who was following me because I was bashing on Glenn Beck, which I love to do, and teabaggers because, I mean, again, anyone who uses that dirty term to describe themselves, they got it coming. And, I guess he wanted to see what kind of crazy liberal commie ideas I'm throwing out there. And I saw his name, and it was the FLA Cracker. And he had the state of Florida logo. He's from Florida. He's the Florida Cracker. So I looked at some of his stuff, and at one point he defended himself saying, I'm not a racist. I voted for Alan Key, which, again, I'd beg to differ.
Well, yeah, I mean, just...
Alan Key is the black community what the Jews who helped the Nazis round up the Jews were. There's no other way to describe him. You know, like Louis Black.
Yeah, but I do love, Spike, how clueless these people are. You know, they were the first ones to refer to themselves as teabaggers. That wasn't just something cute that Rachel Maddow came up with. They called themselves that first. I'm waiting till I find out about an angry group of conservative people from Cleveland who are really, really hacked and call themselves the Cleveland Steamers.
Yeah, the Steaming Man. We're the Cleveland Steamers. Yeah, or maybe there'll be a group of Latino Tea Party protesters all named Sanchez, and they're tired of the dirty government.
Yeah, see, now stop.
Trombone players. You know,
angry members of the brass section, yeah.
I still think maybe we just need more references to two girls in a cup when dealing with some of these people because
I'm so glad Ferg's not in the room.
They're certainly feeding their following a pile of you know what.
Well.
That I think that of all 30.
Let me make abundantly clear. Don't anybody Google what Spike just said. Just don't. Trust Bob. Don't do it.
And if you've watched The Daily Show, you already know what you're in for. Although Kermit the Frog watching it's a funny one. Because you don't see the actual video. You just see Kermit the Frog's reaction.
Oh, don't make me go search that. And don't send the audience off doing that, Spike. I mean, come on. There are essential thresholds of decency that even we follow here.
Oh, come on. It's Rosh Hashanah. It's time to celebrate today. Have a good time. Eat some chopped chicken liver and watch things that'll make you...
Or Chinese food. Liver.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. But, oh, and before I go, since it is Friday and sport, you know, football, pigskin, weekend, college football, I figured you of all people will love this. My college football team being the Patriot League, Lafayette Leopards, Lafayette College, Eastern Pennsylvania, Patriot League school, which is almost like Ivy League, just not as well known. Half of the oldest rivalry in college football history with right wing Lehigh University. And tomorrow is their home opener against Liberty, the crazy right wing.
Oh my God, we already opened with them. What?
Yeah. So now the Lafayette Leopards get to have the crazy evangelical football team come. But the great thing as a fan of Lafayette is I know that the evangelical school is not getting the best athletes. So that's
hey, yeah, but they've got a kid. Their quarterback is a transfer from somewhere significant, and I tell you seriously, the kid can play some ball.
Maybe Notre Dame gets a lot of crazy Christians are getting a little tired of Charlie White.
Oh no! Liberty University. I don't care how good he was. Liberty University would never take a transfer from Notre Dame. It just wouldn't happen.
Yeah, they probably because they disagree with Catholics and the Ku Klux Klan hates Catholics. Did I just say that out loud? I'm sorry. Let me go back to the evangelical belief of dinosaurs and man roam the earth, better known as Land of the Lost.
I'm still waiting for the creationist to come up with a Sleestak skeleton.
Well, actually, for that matter, too, the Flintstones had dinosaurs and man on earth at the same time. So there you go. That's pretty much where that's what the evangelicals think is science, is Fred Flintstone. Although, unfortunately, I think Fred Flintstone has more fact than the evangelicals at this point. I hope they cream Liberty tomorrow. And, well, first of all, the name of that school just makes me cringe because they promote anything but Liberty.
Well, yeah, but bear in mind, their head coach has been coach of the year in that league for, are they Patriot Conference too?
No, they're not. They're a Division II school, but they're not Patriot League.
No, they're what used to be 1AA.
Whatever league they play in,
their head coach has been coach of the year 3 years running.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they changed to A's, so now it's a Division I, Division II.
It's Football Bowl Series and Football Championship Series. Is what right. 1A is, or what 1A and 1AA is now. They morons, just pick a name and leave it alone.
Morons or morans?
Morans, absolutely, morans.
At least once a week I have to make fun of some right-winger on Twitter and ask them, do they think I'm a moran?
Oh, I never type moron anymore. I always type M-O-R-A-N. And inevitably somebody will correct me somewhere along the way once in a while, and then I get to send them the link to the photo. And I know that I have perpetuated the spelling yet one more time around the planet.
and the one last thing. This is everything coming back to Twitter. Obviously, I need a job because I'm spending too much. I mean, I went fishing today, and I was wondering what was going on Twitter. It's a pretty sad.
Oh, that's sad.
Life. Actually, if I was catching fish, I wouldn't have been thinking like that. But when nothing's biting after a while, you just start wandering in thought. But especially when I lost the good. And if anyone's in the Tobyhanna State Park and there's a Bass Pro Shops wooden bobber, can I have it back? It fell off my line today.
No, oh, okay. we'll put that out on an internet APB site. Were you fishing a lake, or is there a stream that runs through Tobyhanna State Park, or what?
There's a stream further up, but I was on the lake today because it was easier to park to go fishing in the lake.
Were you going after anything in particular, or just what happened to be biting that wasn't?
Well, trout. And it's Trout Lake, so they stock it with trout. But
so you were actually fishing for dinner.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I was going for. And there was nothing out there. I didn't lose any lures or anything. That's good because they're worth a little more than the bobber. But I felt bad because, I try not to pollute when I go fishing, and I hate when I lose things because then I've accidentally littered in a lake. So, and unfortunately, it was a breezy day, so I really couldn't keep up with the bobber. It kind of just kept blowing real quickly away from me. So I have no
But it is, after all, a bobber, and sooner or later it'll hit shore.
Yeah, I should just roam the lake for days waiting to get my $2 back.
I want my bobber back. Yeah.
It's nice. It's wood. It's not plastic. But Glenn, the butthole clown Beck, has a Twitter, and it's great because, you know, he gets to say his crazy thoughts in writing, so you can actually get him on stuff. And he promoted this band, this British band that I kind of think sucks before he promoted them, named Muse. And, you know, I'm a Pearl Jam kind of guy. Not my cup of tea. Maybe I shouldn't say suck, but I don't like their music. And him saying, this band, there's great music, great lyrics, and they get it. And apparently he thinks they're libertarians or something. So I thought, let me do a little Google search. And wouldn't you know it, the lead singer on his Wikipedia has a thing about politics. His last name is Bellamy, which I thought was kind of coincidental. You know, Francis Bellamy, the Christian socialist who wrote The Pledge, my favorite thing of late to get right-wingers with. And I don't think he's related in any way, but okay, so I don't have a connection yet to socialism and Glenn Beck, but I'm working on it. And it didn't take too long because this guy believes that the Project for a New American Century and the neoconservatives created an inside job on September the 11th, and they did that so they could invade Iraq. Now, isn't that something? I've quickly connected Glenn Beck with the people he calls the loony left. Because he, you know, when he does his chalkboard with all these circles and arrows and misspelling of words to try to connect stuff, isn't that amazing? I just beat him at his own game in a matter of 30 seconds. And I, you know, the scariest part about Fox is the fact that somehow, and we all know he's a slime bag anyways, so we're not going to drink the Kool-Aid, but at least he has a little bit of, I guess, intelligence to be able to read polls and ratings. But Bill O'Reilly, have you seen that one? Him just a month after he bashed the idea of a public option.
Yeah, now he's for it?
Yeah. I mean, obviously we could get him on the flip-flop and thing. But that aside, clearly what that illustrates is Bill O'Reilly's smart enough to notice, hey, the polls show that mainstream America, for the most part, supports this. Therefore, if I don't want to become a fringe show that eventually will be canceled because no one's watching, I better change my song and support it, which actually, in a way, shows Bill O'Reilly's a natural-born politician for the two parties. That's how they operate, which goes to show he's no independent. But I just thought that was really funny that he switched on that. That alone should show just how irrelevant these teabaggers are that are carrying on. And I certainly hope.
Yeah, that one of their darlings dared cross them?
Yeah, I hope it creates a lot of dissension within them that'll just further disenfranchise them and rip them apart, which I couldn't love more. But there was one last thing I was gonna hit, and I think the problem was I was up late last night watching the IndyCars qualifying from Japan live at 3 in the morning on the internet, so my brain's not all there tonight.
Yeah, that may not... Yeah, wow, that's dedication.
The green flag drops live tonight at 11 Eastern time, so I'll be up watching that. I've almost contemplated taking an hour or two nap before the race so I can watch it.
Well, that would be the nap would be starting just about any time now if you're going to do that. So, you know, because you don't want to be waking up and rubbing the sleep out of your eyes with the green flag dropping.
Yeah, especially since unlike NASCAR races, IndyCar races kind of go quick. So if you fall asleep during it, you'll miss the whole thing. If it's not the 500, but that was such a good line I had too. Oh man, you know. That's the danger of doing rips and calling up political talk shows. Sometimes your memory's a little short.
Well, sometimes, half the time when you've been on hold for a while, you want to touch on all the stuff because your mind is sitting there going 90 miles a minute. I know, I've been there.
Yeah, yeah. Of course. How could I forget the mullet at the Cracker Barrel that I heard about first on Malloy and then I read about it some more. Oh, my God. This guy.
Oh, is this the guy who's been banned for life?
I don't know if he's been banned for life, but he beat the snot out of the black woman with her child there.
Oh, no, no, no. Oh, that's sick. Yes.
Yeah. And but this is the even sicker part was, I forget which TV station it was in Atlanta, but they had the story and they had the comments section. And some media outlets require you be a registered user to do comments. Others don't. One of them in Atlanta didn't, and they were guest commenters trying to rationalize this. Oh, this... if anyone's standing, you better sit down, because you're about to hear the stupidest thing I think I've ever heard from a racist, and I've heard some pretty dumb lines.
Well, you know, when stupid and racist are putting the same sentence together, yeah. But, yeah, go ahead.
But it was, why is it whenever race is involved, they have to call it a hate crime? Yeah, exactly. I had to read that again.
That's like having a C clamp put on my head, Spike.
And of course, then there was someone claiming to be a friend of the guy, and he would never do that. And she spit on him, and you can't see that on video because how can a video show spit? Only what that person didn't realize is that there were numerous eyewitnesses who told the police we saw the whole thing, and she never spat on him. But really the thing that I think really is the worst part of all, aside from the fact that the right-wingers thought it's okay to beat a woman if she spits on a man, any rationale to excuse spousal abuse, obviously. I mean, that's why they were ganging up these guys on, like, women Democrats at the town halls or sick older men like Harlan Specter. But with that aside, maybe the biggest thing that really, really... they should really be ashamed of themselves, is she was an Army reservist. Now, they say they're the party that supports the troops.
Yeah, so much for that.
Supporting some mullet piece of you-know-what that beat on a woman in front of her child, who, by the way, she serves her country, and from what I could see, he never has. I don't know. I just think maybe instead of trying to excuse every racist on Earth, because that's what Rush is telling you to do, while he's calling for segregated school buses and, you know, excusing people with posters making Obama looking like an African savage, and then them saying, oh, well, people said crazy stuff about Bush, but I don't remember groups of black people with, like, you know, things of him looking like a cracker or, you know, get the honky out. That didn't happen when Bush was in the White House. Maybe white people call him, you know, Hitler, which actually was slightly inaccurate in that the vice president was at that time. I never recall people looking for racial stereotypes about Bush like they have for Obama. It just cracks me up. Now, granted, they are people who are conservatives who have, maybe I wouldn't say they're legitimate beefs, but they're not racially charged beefs about the plans. You know, I get it. A lot of them are in the pockets of big insurance and stuff like that. But overall, the most feminist of them all are the ones who, if they had their druthers, the white hood would not be looked down upon as much. And Rush Limbaugh, of course, and Glenn Beck, the suicider, are the ones really whooping them up into a frenzy. They do this, and then they say it's so easy to play a race card. Why does the other side do it when they're doing it? They should just be thankful we're not like them and calling for masses of black people to wear Nixon, Reagan, and W. Bush rubber masks, burn peace signs on their lawns, and hang them for being the lowlifes of society, which they are, actually, unlike where the Klan claimed that about black people for illegitimate reasons that were false. The worst part is that, as always, the corporate media, for the most part, just don't have the pair to call it out for what it is. I mean, at this point, teabaggers should not be getting coverage. If the Ku Klux Klan marches on Washington, you don't cover them. Or if you do, you relegate them to a blurb. But yet the teabaggers get this coverage as if they have some legitimate point, when the only point is on their hood when they're not protesting. And I'll leave it at that.
All right, Spike. Great call, man. Thanks, and have a great weekend, and enjoy the race if you stay up for it.
I certainly will, and I certainly hope to God I get to hear, and this is his real name, the announcer of the Lafayette Leopards. I hope I get to hear Dick Hammer announcing how the Lafayette Leopards are beating the snot out of Liberty.
I'll be hoping the very same thing.
All right.
Take care, Spike.
Later.
That's Spike from the general Toby Hanna, PA area. Always a blast. Although, that's you know, just a Philly thing. No offense to the Philly folks. It's just, you know, stereotypes, and we're only having fun here. I love Philly. Nope. Hey, welcome to the program.
It's Richard.
Hey, Richard, what's up?
Well, I've got a couple of things on my mind, but let me start with the health situation here. I thought you might be interested. Listeners, I went to a managed care commission meeting a couple of days ago. Now, this is my county's managed health care commission that oversees our own HMO, county-operated HMO, that proves that government can do things right. And we had a meeting that was devoted mostly to how we're going to get around what Arnold stuck us with. I don't know if you're aware. They reduced the coverage of Medi-Cal drastically. Medi-Cal being our
your version of Medicaid.
Yeah, our state version of Medicaid. They eliminated coverage for all kinds of things, you know, like podiatry and mental health and what else? Some sort of diabetes screening and, you know, a big one. No, teeth are out. You know, no dental care.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and, of course, there's no care.
Wait. Does that mean we can, we here in Appalachia can pass the toothless hillbilly torch to California now?
Yeah, I mean, well, I don't even think they'll pay for pulling them out, you know. So, let me see what.
So y'all just gonna let them fall out?
Yeah, just let them fall out. And let's see, undocumented people, you know, immigrants, aliens, whatever, get nothing, nohow. Now, we are really prevented now legally from serving that population, and we've tried all kinds of ways to get around it. So anyway, we have figured out a few ways of getting around the restrictions, and of course, you know, our budget is severely impacted. The county being a unit of the state, they've yanked a lot of money out from under us. See, we're not just dealing with, when I say the Contra Costa Health Plan, and I'm talking about Contra Costa County right now,
right.
Contra Costa Health Plan is the HMO. And the state likes to have Medi-Cal people covered by the HMO for various reasons. But the HMO actually is much more efficient than the usual way that I keep forgetting the name of it. You know, your version of Medi-Cal.
Medicaid.
Yeah. The way that Medicaid usually works, if you get people into an HMO, you can actually cover them for more stuff if the HMO is willing. The state doesn't care. You know, once they're signed over, you know, it's the county's problem. But the county has efficiency which regular fee-for-service Medicaid does not have. Are you with me so far?
Yes.
Okay. So we can provide better coverage for people because a lot of the administrative fees and paper juggling and all that crap is eliminated. And also, you know, a lot of doctors take Medicaid people, but they'll give them short shrift in one way or another because they're not making any money on these people. You know, the reimbursement is so paltry. So where we come in is that we know this up front. You know, we know what the state's going to pay for stuff, and we take it on. And we have the efficiency to be able to accommodate it. So anyway, this takes care.
And what would happen, do you suppose, inside an avarice-driven corporate scheme?
Well, they would just let the people die.
Oh, well, okay. I got to ask.
Yeah, I know. I mean, you know, your average doctor, well, it's up to the doctor. I mean, you know, your average HMO doesn't want to have anything to do with this crowd of people because they don't make, you know,
it's not profitable?
Right, it's not. Oh,
yeah, see, I mean, we're just keeping track. Let's see.
It's not profitable.
We've got 2 3/4 hours. That's 12. That's 24. That's 30. We are looking right now at about 36 people, I think, have died for want of health insurance just in the time that I've been on the air this evening in the United States.
I believe it. Well, we're how can I say? We try very hard to really cover the people in this county, even if they don't have insurance. Now, so we've got in the Contra Costa Health Plan, we have a lot of the Medi-Cal population, and they're pretty happy with it. I think Kaiser, there's one other outfit that covers them too. I forget. I think Kaiser does. Blue Cross Blue Shield comes along as a distant third, and you know they're here, they're gone. I don't take them seriously. And then, of course, we have the general population who are free to buy into the health plan and pay over the counter for it, which I did for a long time. But in terms of numbers, there's a hell of a lot more of the Medi-Cal people. And, of course, then the plan is available to employers, just like they can buy Blue Cross. They can buy Contra Costa Health Plan for their employees. And the state, I'm sorry, the county's employees also can buy in at a very, very good rate. And the reason I'm just mentioning, I've said all this before, but just for new listeners, I wanted to cover it again. So right now, the county health system is part of this. You know, we overlap very heavily with the county's health department, which is like anybody's county health department anywhere in the country. You know, you're the health service of last resort. And makes things interesting because a lot of people who work for this department are people who really want to do this kind of medicine, which makes things exciting. And, okay, the first thing that happened is that a free clinic is being established in the city of Concord. And it's going to be it's going to be served by people who are volunteering. So there's going to be doctors volunteering, there's going to be nurses volunteering, probably at least one pharmacist. And here we can take care of undocumented aliens. So they're just not out on the street. And the county is not allowed to pay money into this, but the county can help be a facilitator. So our people are in the facilitating role, help put it together. And part of the guiding forces behind this is the free clinic in Berkeley, which is long established. San Francisco has one as well. So that's one way we're taking care of undocumented people. Our Medi-Cal population are going to continue to get the diabetes screening that the state disallowed. We're going to just do it. And then the third thing is that the county has set up a discount plan for drugs. And they did it with the help of a nonprofit, a national nonprofit that I'm not really familiar with. They made up some specs and did a request for proposals. It was pretty elaborate. And got back a lot of numbers. So it looks like we're going to be able to provide some nice prescription discounts for people who have no coverage whatsoever who live in the county. And they're going to get, I think it'll be around one-third off on all their prescriptions, as well as some coverage for over-the-counter medicine, which just blows me away. So and the county's just going to make this happen. So that's these are the accomplishments.
Well, then why aren't we hearing about this kind of thing, Richard? I mean, your take. I mean, obviously, I have my own.
Oh God, Bob, I don't. We just do our thing. You know, the county health department does its thing. They don't. They're not. They're not talented at promotion, although here and there we've had people on board when we've had the money to pay them who've publicized stuff. I said recently on the show that I found out about the Contra Costa Health Plan because I was riding on BART and there was a sign in the car, you know, like an ad. Otherwise, I would never have known about it. And we had a billboard campaign. But you know, when Michael Moore did his film, he didn't know about us. You know? And our CEO was a little bent out of shape.
Wow.
On the other hand, how was he to know about it? How was he to know about
it? Yeah, because it's not like there's a big advertising budget.
No. There's virtually none. I mean, we're...
And see, that's... And what you're doing, Richard, is you're sort of opening on the door on the... on the inherent flaws in individualized, sort of balkanized little plans, and that's no disparagement on my part of what's going on.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Because you've already reflected a couple of weeks ago on the fact that you know that there was a co-op that was absorbed.
Well, it's hard for me to say. I call it a co-op. It was it was a nonprofit. And this was a long time ago. It was a nonprofit with ideals, and they marketed. They expanded a little bit. It was based in Oakland, and they couldn't make ends meet. You know, it was as simple as that. See, sometimes the way you have to make operations like this are extremely complicated. If you're running it, you have to have contracts with people that they're going to boggle the listeners' minds. But it's like, let's say you have an HMO, and you want to cover your member out of your area, okay? So I come to Charleston, West Virginia, and I fall down a flight of stairs. Well, I have to be able to go into Charleston General Hospital. I'm assuming there is one. Is there?
Well, yeah, there's a conglomerate down there. Yeah, there's a Charleston General.
Okay. So, I mean, I'd have to be able to...
General on one side of the river, Memorial on the other.
Okay. But I'd have to be able to walk into the nearest ER and at least that and get treatment, and they would have to get reimbursed. They would have to have a clear billing path over to my HMO to get reimbursed. And so the HMO has to set up all manner of contracts with hospitals, with different hospital associations. You know, there's a lot to it. And my own personal experience has been every time I've been in the ER of some other outfit, they have screwed up the billing really, really dramatically. So, oh, sorry.
Ouch.
Sorry about that.
That's okay.
I hit one of those buttons. So you know, there's a lot to this. There's a lot of cost to all of this paper pushing. And we have to interface with the industry in the way that they're used to. And I tell you, man, I sure look forward to the day when we just scrap this whole model. I mean, there's just a humongous set of standards and practices in place that I think really suck away the efficiency of the system. Am I clear about this?
Yeah, you are. You are.
You know, I mean, we have all these codes, you know, fix a toenail number 4957, you know, cut the toenails at the two different corners. It's, you know, 4957-192, you know, and does this guy pay for this or does he not? And it's insane. And, of course, your doctor has to go through this crap. the hospital goes through this crap, and it's like it's this dance, and everybody is asleep. You know, they just do the dance because the choreography is in place. And we have to question every bit of this. You know, I mean, most HMOs don't cover the temporomandibular joint.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Check your policy.
Or, as we've learned, they don't cover cesarean sections, and they don't cover incidents of domestic violence.
Oh, I didn't know about the cesarean part.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and my HMO does not cover the temporomandibular.
And TMJ is hell.
Yeah, right. And dental plans don't cover it either. So the person is just SOL, and, you know, so I have to come back to my own health plan and say one of these days, you know, how come we don't cover the temporomandibular joint? I mean, it's part of the body, right? And it's not teeth.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, Richard, got a roll, brother. We're fresh out. Good hearing from you.
Good. Yeah, great.
All right.
See you, Bob.
Take care. Calling from California, that's Richard with it. And, you know, the more I hear from Richard about his experience with what can only be termed, you know, public option type health plans, the more it seems the answer. But it can't be an answer that is insular. It's got to be, oh, there's that word, universal. Universal health care has got to be the end. It has got to, and I realize there are some people who are working through things as a means to an end, but I don't buy into, you know, well, it's like Dennis Kucinich said, you know, Roy Rogers' horse to the rescue. Trigger my rear end, okay? Just, no. Do it. Just do it. It's 4 minutes before the hour, and this Front Porch Friday has absolutely flown by. A few moments before we go out. Just a bit of a memory to Mary Travers, who, along with Peter and Paul, started so much. Shoot, I was hearing this stuff when I was a baby. No kidding. Mary's gone on. Travers, moving on Wednesday, following a bone transplant for chemotherapy last year, or a bone transplant for leukemia last year. She died as a result of complications arising from the chemotherapy that followed it. But they started so much, so very much. I suppose the question is, you know, I'm all for the hammer and the bell and the warning and the danger. The question for us as liberals is whether or not that love between my brothers and my sisters all over this land part is accomplishable when the other side is bringing guns to town hall meetings where the other side is clearly unarmed. What becomes of that vision? That's the choice. Is it Peter, Paul, and Mary? Or is it Jack Palance and Shane saying, pick up the gun? And then shooting and saying, you all saw he had a gun. The choice couldn't be clearer. And finally, I want to thank everyone who stepped up in the last couple of days to try to make September into October more viable. You went a long way toward doing that. We are here on the 18th day of September. Halfway and a little more to our monthly goal. And we just hope that we can make it the rest of the way through the end of this month. Have a great weekend. Join us Monday. We'll be right here. And thank you. Thank you for the dedication that you have shown to making sure that this little endeavor continues. I know there is sacrifice behind every penny that has come our way. And please know that it is respected, it is honored, and it is appreciated in ways that I am scarcely able to give voice to. Thank you. Thanks also, of course, always to the recuperating Peter Godbold, to John Fox, to Ben Birch, to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome, I'm back. Thank you for your patience in dealing with my absence last night. I apologize for it, but no, I don't. The purpose of being gone, of course, being to go and watch the boy play football. It was a tough night in Mount Hope. We went down to defeat again. We are 0-3. But you know what? Losses are teachable moments, perhaps more so than wins are. Wow, listen to that ex post facto rationalization. But it's true. Yeah, it is true. I say that because, among other things, it's provided an opportunity to watch some game film. And I got to tell you, they moved Ferg from linebacker down to the defensive line. And he was in the backfield all night long. I'm sorry, I'm a proud papa. What are you gonna do? The lovely and talented Doodle was over on the sidelines cheering her little heart out. Beautiful, exuberant, all those cheerleadery things. Yeah, it just makes a daddy proud. Anybody who's a parent knows what I'm talking about. But that's where I was last night. But I'm here tonight. And there are some clouds sort of rolling in. It's a little bit gray here in what's left of wild, wonderful, West by God, almost level Virginia. And I think we'll be clearing out the stack tonight, among other things. Because there's a bunch of stuff that hasn't been touched on. Starting off, some catch-up work. You know, we talked, I guess it was Wednesday night, was it not? Or perhaps it was Tuesday. These things do tend to run together just a bit for me. We talked about the fact that the woman who played Norma, who was the basis for the character Norma Rae, had passed away. She passed away of brain cancer. We talked about the fact that she found herself, as does most anyone who involves themselves in the attempt to make human life better in this nation and on this planet, she found herself expanding from something from labor rights into all the rest of the human rights, because all of these things are merely subsets of human rights. Well, there's a little bit of a follow-up. I don't know if you listen to other liberal or progressive programs. You may have already heard this. I don't know. But Crystal Lee Sutton died when she did, at least in part, because for a period of time, her health insurance would not cover the medications she needed to treat her disease. I read that and my eyes just sort of ached. It was described she said, Crystal Lee Sutton. How in the world can it take so long to find out whether they would cover the medicine or not when it could be a matter of life or death? It is almost like, in a way, committing murder. But, of course, we know that that is exactly what the for-profit, the profit-driven, the avarice, you know, maybe I'm getting it wrong by calling it for-profit.